This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
It's 1 a.m. Guys, thanks for coming down. That was Little Brother Project. Don't forget their CD release party, 916 at Clark's on Main Street. That would be 314 Main. Stay tuned for After Hours and do something nice for those folks. Any folks. All folks.
where you left your heart. And there's one thing more, I miss the one that I care for. Oh, then I miss. More than I miss New Orleans. Whoa, whoa, yeah.
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours. Yes, I love to be queer. I do indeed. My. What's going on? How come I can still hear people? That's bizarre.
Isn't that it right there?
I'm turning everything off, and I can still hear people. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
Hello, Houston, Galveston, and New Orleans, and welcome to the September 3rd, 2005 edition of After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. And this is kind of a special night tonight because of everything that's been going on. We've got a bunch of people here. Sally's here. Hello, Sally.
Hello.
From the Montrose Counseling Center.
And the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard.
Yes, and we're going to be talking about what's available for evacuees from New Orleans.
Right.
Because there's a lot of them, and they're going to be hitting this city.
Exactly.
If they haven't already. Okay, first of all, I wanted to tell you what you heard in the beginning. That was not queer music. That was the Mumbo Brothers and a nice slow version of Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans? And I thought that I wanted to do something incredibly special for this segment. And there's no queer music.
Do you hear heavy breathing? That's not me.
No, I know. I don't know what that is. It scares me, actually. So, okay.
I was fixing to say, Big Roy's not in here yet.
No, no, he isn't. There was a, oh, thank you, honey. Thank you, dear. Speaking of Big Roy, who brought me my coffee. And lovely coffee it is. There was a meeting this evening over at EJ's. Kind of a hastily put together thing because, you know.
We haven't had a lot of time.
No, we haven't. Hastily usually means that you didn't put a little time, a little thought and effort into it, and that certainly wasn't the case with this because we had many groups and organizations involved, and what we're going to talk about is what's available. I have Sally Huffer here from the Montrose Counseling Center, and at about 5 minutes, Katie Caldwell from the Montrose Clinic will be calling in. Big Chris is on the line as we speak, and if you will hit... No, I'll do it. Chris? Chris is listening to us. So, he will be here because he is doing an off-the-cuff fundraiser for relief victims over at... Ripcord. Yes. Oh. Over at the Ripcord, yes. People are pointing and doing and wanting questions answered, and it's too crazy. We also have a whole bunch of folks in the talk studio that we're going to be getting to in just a little bit. Sally, a lot of stuff is happening through the Montrose Counseling Center, and especially the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard.
I think that's our primary, what we're trying to get out there right now, is because the switchboard can be a one-stop resource where people can call and find out, even if we don't have the answers for them, we can provide them with the resources and with the referrals to other agencies that can help them.
Now, I want to give that phone number out now, and if you don't have, out there, don't have a pen and paper, then we'll be giving that number out again. I know it. So
you know it inside and out.
Yeah, I was there for 15 years. 713-529-3211.
Thank you very much.
So tell us what Montrose Counseling Center has to offer.
In general terms, or I'm sure you mean right now we're talking about Hurricane.
Okay. Yes. I know we've got, this is, in addition to Katrina, September 4th through the 11th, I guess, is National Suicide Month.
Suicide Prevention Month. Thank you.
Okay, put my foot in it.
I want somebody to watch over Jimmy.
Yes, thank you.
Night and day. Night and day.
I may have to keep you here all night tonight. Yes, suicide prevention and meth, crystal meth group is forming.
We've got a lot of things happening at the Counseling Center coming up.
Yeah, so, but... Let's talk about what's going on with Katrina.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most pressing right now.
Yes, please.
Through the switchboard, as I say, we have a number of resources that we've put together, primarily just by communicating with other organizations, you know, that serve the GLBT community and HIV positive community. Mm-hmm. So if people can call the switchboard, if they're at hotels, I mean, we're certainly trying to get the information out there to call the switchboard, and then we can refer them to other agencies. We have everything from places where you can drop off food and clothing. Through the switchboard, we're coordinating our own safe home system. It's a way for individuals that are extremely generous, willing to open up their homes for evacuees who are here in Houston who are either G, L, B, or T. And so we do a preliminary screening with those individuals. And once we hear from the evacuees who are looking for a place, and we're anticipating, you know, as people, you know, run out of funds to stay in the hotels and that sort of thing, that they're going to need a place to stay.
Yeah.
And so we try to match them up. We'll ask you some basic questions. Is your household a smoking household? Yeah. Do you have any pets? That's pretty critical information, especially for people with allergies and people with suppressed immune systems and so forth. So we'll ask you those questions. We'll ask, do you have a preference? Do you want to have lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about children? So we'll ask you those questions, and then once we find a match for you, then we will get the information from the evacuee, and we will get that person's information and provide it to the homeowner. That way the homeowner can get in touch with the evacuee that we've identified as the best match, and then they can do their own screening, because they're opening their homes to these people, and so they need to make sure that they feel comfortable and safe and that this is a good match for them, too.
You bet.
So that's one of the resources that we're doing through the switchboard, and I've got a number of people who are staffing the switchboard all weekend long from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
That's incredible.
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and they'll be able to take information, enter it into the database, and coordinate that information with others. So that's the primary thing that we're doing right now.
Is Chris on the line? Oh, I guess not.
Hello?
Hello, Chris.
Yes.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi. I was waiting to see when you were going to kick it over to me. So, oh boy, sounds like you do need me over there.
Yes, I know. You're still over at the Ripcord.
I'm at the Ripcord with what they're calling Southern Decadence in Exile.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm here with is the Houston Big Men's Club. We're kicking off 4 weekends of fundraising for Katrina.
Good.
Because last week, you know, I was talking, I was going to be reporting to you from the French Quarter with Convergence, and now there is no French Quarter.
Right.
And a lot of people out there need help and support, and, you know, with one of those things, some of us guys were going, if Katrina would have hit 1 week early, 1 week later, you know, we would have been smack dab in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to do our best to help out the situation with that. So we're going to be here till the bottom of the hour doing our hamburger fundraiser. All the proceeds is going to the Red Cross.
Okay.
In 2 weeks, we're doing the same thing again with the burgers. We're going to be collecting clothing. We're going to do another event at the Ripcord on the 24th to just try and help out our fellow citizen, because this is a major disaster. And we've seen so far, unfortunately, you know, in a way, I have to say Katrina is turning out to be similar to the AIDS crisis.
Yes.
Government has dropped the ball in the beginning, and it's we, the grassroots community, that are having to step up and take over and get things done. And I was impressed the fact of seeing there was at least 60 people from the community coming together tonight and figure out what our next step is. And we've got some tremendous plans. We've got a lot of people have donated money. Some person came in and dropped off 5 $20 gift cards to Walmart.
Wow.
So that's the sort of spirit that we want to see in the community. And, you know, we're glad to be a part of it. Colt 45 and the bartenders over at EJ's are working on that tomorrow. And we're going to give you a whole list of all the different things that are coming up this week. But, you know, especially look around there. You see somebody with a Louisiana plate, let them cut in line in traffic for you, because, you know, these people...
That's right. They don't know where they're going.
and, you know, it's bad enough driving Houston traffic when you've been here 10, 15, 20 years. Imagine that all your life is in that car, and you're trying to negotiate this construction disaster we've got here in Houston. And you just have to sit and think about it and remember the fact, you know, it's going to sound like I'm getting biblical here, but the old saying, there but for the grace of God go I. And
absolutely.
How easily Katrina could have hit us, and we could be in this situation.
Okay.
And so, come out. Like I said, we're going to be here for a little bit longer, but make sure when you hear some of the events that are coming up later, go out and support these people, because we've met a lot of people from New Orleans that are here at the Ripcord that, you know, just appreciate, you know, the simple fact that, you know, Houston is reaching out to open them up, welcome them with open arms. So, I'll be wrapping up here, and I'll be over in time for roundtable tonight.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
All right, see ya.
Okay. Yeah, okay, we've got Chris on hold so he can hear what's going on while he's cooking those burgers over there. And I want to continue with Sally.
I think he mentioned something that you know, one of the things that we're trying to focus on is that, you know, any good deed that you can do right now, even if it's not necessarily directly impacting the people who are here or the people who are in Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama, every good deed that you do causes a ripple effect. And so, you know, if you are going to let somebody in, you know, to cut in front of you, that person could go on the rest of their, you know, merry way and not be aggravated by traffic, which means that they're not going to yell at their partner when they get home. And, you know, so there is a ripple effect.
Yeah. But the reason that we're doing all of this is because we're focusing on the GLBTQ community.
Right, and we know
and
that...
And as Ann pointed out at the meeting tonight, because we've already seen the evil face of homophobia arising.
Right, yes. And I mean, certainly there are a number of resources that we do encourage everybody to, you know, investigate, such as, you know, registering with the Red Cross, mm-hmm. registering with FEMA. However, there are also some agencies out there that are not necessarily as GLBT friendly as we'd like them to be. And so they're not going to be treated as affirming and nurturing as we'd like them.
That's right.
The other situation that comes up is that even if the agencies themselves, if it's not institutionalized homophobia, because we're dealing with such a large quantity of people, there's no way to police every resident in every shelter.
Yeah.
For example, we got a phone call from somebody that had just simply overheard a gay man indicating that he was at a shelter. He was complaining to a shelter volunteer, saying that the other residents were harassing him because he was gay. Now, the shelter volunteer wanted to do their best to try to help this person, mm-hmm. and the person who was dropping off a donation got in touch with us, and so we've been trying to work with the Red Cross, trying to identify who this person is and make sure that this person knows that there's a safe place that they can go.
Yeah, that's very important. It's almost critical, and I know a lot of GLBT folks out there want to do something to help their fellow GLBTs.
Exactly.
And that was the spirit of this meeting tonight, and this is what we want to put out over the air.
Now, that's the main thing that we're doing. However, we're also putting together a support group that's going to start meeting this coming Tuesday mm-hmm. for people who are going through goodness knows what kind of stress. I mean, you've left everything at home. And, I mean, all the questions that you have, what is the condition of my home? Where are my friends and family? What about my pets? You know, if I'm living paycheck to paycheck, how am I going to afford to be away from home? Am I going to have a job to go back to?
Yes, yes.
So that's going to create a lot of stress. It's going to create a lot of stress that's interrelationship. Mm. And so we have a support group that we're starting this coming Tuesday from 11:30 until 1. 11:30 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon.
Gotcha.
And it's at the Counseling Center.
701 Richmond.
701 Richmond, exactly. And it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Just drop in. You don't have to pre-register. You don't have to RSVP. Just swing by.
Okay. We have Katie Caldwell on the line, so we're going to hear a little bit about what the clinic is doing, and we're going to come back to the center because, with the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, I look at this as the place to go first to get the information. But there's a lot of things going on at the clinic. So if you'll hit that top red button.
I have the power to put Katie on the air.
Yes, or take her off.
Hold on.
Katie Caldwell.
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, you're on After Hours. This is Jimmy Carper, and I've got Sally Huffer with me.
Great. Hey, Sally.
Hello.
So we've already talked a little bit about what the Counseling Center is doing in this regard, and we want to hear more about what the clinic is doing.
We are opening this weekend. We're open tomorrow. Well, actually, I guess it's today, isn't it?
It is today,
It's today from 9 until 1,
mm-hmm.
on Sunday from 12 to 4,
mm-hmm.
and on Monday from 9 until 1.
Mm-hmm.
We have free health care. Any health issues that people have to deal with, we can help you with free medications. We have some bus passes, bus tokens. We're going to be able to help people with any vision problems that they're having. In other words, if they need new contact lenses, glasses,
that's something that
any medical needs that they have, we're here to help.
Yeah, that's something that you and I were talking about in the parking lot.
It is.
Can you imagine the number of people that have either lost or broken their glasses through all of this, and they can't read? Or I know I can't read without them.
Can you imagine leaving your house thinking, not knowing how long it's going to take? You're going to take a couple of changes of clothing and a couple days worth of medications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you don't know. So vision services are available and medications are available. And you were talking about HIV medications?
We're talking about any kind of medication.
Oh, okay.
HIV medications or any other kind of medications. I know the transgender community, many people are concerned about their hormone replacement.
Oh, no kidding.
We can help with that. We can help with any. You do not have to be HIV positive. It's any. We're really reaching out to the in particular to the GLBT community and to people who are HIV positive.
Okay. And we can reach Montrose Clinic at
713-830-3047. And that's our hurricane hotline.
Yeah.
We are, even though we're open, just the, you know, the limited hours, you're going to be checking the hotline very, very regularly to try to call people back if they call and leave a message so we can get them into, we don't want anybody to go without their medications in particular.
Right. You've got something going on this Wednesday with an 18-wheeler coming in.
Actually, yes, we do. There's very generously a healthcare provider out in California is sending an 18-wheeler full of medical supplies down here that are going to. We're a beneficiary. It's well, several other clinics, and so we're going to need some help unloading the all of these medical supplies and getting them distributed to the clinic.
So we need some folks with muscles to help unload
exactly.
a truck on Wednesday.
Right, that's
and
correct.
Who should they contact?
They should contact Sana Alton and at 713-830-3015.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And the clinic's been there for us for a long time.
Yes, as we know, the counseling center and us were founded out of the same town hall meeting in the late 70s.
Yeah, to say nothing of the switchboard.
Exactly. That's right.
And if folks need any more information or what kind of things you do, they can always get you at montroseclinic.org.
That's correct.
Good, good. So, anything else going on? Or is this enough?
With us, those are the main things. We just, again, want to emphasize we don't want anyone going without any medications, anyone in need of any form of health care. Please come by the clinic or give us a call.
Okay, we'll
And we're at 215 West Palmer.
Yes, very important. That's where Elgin, almost where Elgin meets Westheimer.
That's correct. We're between Taft and Bagby on Lower Westheimer.
There you go. Very, very nice building on the left as you're coming from Elgin.
And on bus routes.
And on bus routes, yes, it is.
And light rail.
We're on multiple bus routes.
Yes, and just blocks from light rail.
That's correct.
That's right. Oh, good. Okay, Katie, I want to thank you for calling in and staying up this late.
And thank you for putting out all this information.
You bet.
And I really, really appreciate
I've
it.
I've got it down here. We'll be repeating it throughout the evening.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. We can't get rid of her.
There we go.
You said amazing. That, not me. I put her on the air.
I know. No, Katie's a sweetheart, and she not only does that, but she does an incredible amount in this community.
I should explain that I'm the closest one to the button to press. That's what this is all about.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Can't see.
So that number for the Montrose Clinic, 713-830-3047. But the number that you should never forget is 713-529-3211.
Gay and Lesbian Switchboard Houston.
That's right. That's Hurricane Central.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that the Counseling Center is doing a lot more other things.
We are doing a lot more other
things.
You've
got a stack of paper in
there. Well, you know, it's funny because I'm not going to release this big file folder that I've been carrying around with me. This has every email that I have received since Wednesday about things that are taking place in the community. A number of emails that I've received from a lot of generous people who are willing to offer their homes to people. And so since I've been putting it into a database so that it's accessible to the volunteers at the switchboard, I had it all wrapped up at 6:30 today. I've been checking my email since our meeting at EJ's yes. at 7 o'clock. I've got a few more. So I'm not willing to part with my folder, but I'm trying to put everything in one consolidated place so that when people do call, we can provide them. And I just printed it out because I have it broken down by section. We have a section for food and clothing, mm-hmm. one for shelter, one for medical, including the good services of the Montrose Clinic.
Yes.
Employment opportunities. I've already received information from a half a dozen places that are looking to hire people. For example, Carlton Hospitality Services wants to hire wait staff for the Astrodome, $9 an hour.
Yay.
You know, we can, if somebody is out there, somebody who doesn't know how long they're going to be staying yeah. here, lives paycheck to paycheck, if they need a job, we've got a couple of places. And we're always asking for people when they have resources to let us know. For example, you know, when Chris called in from the Ripcord, you know, that's one of the basic services that we provide is letting people know. We've got a lot of people here mm-hmm. for Southern Decadence. No doubt we do.
Sure.
Now, do we want them to show up at, you know, at Chances tonight wearing full leather regalia? You know, if they call the switchboard, we can let them know which bars cater to,
yes.
you know, which cross-section of
Chances
of our community.
The lesbian bar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. But, I mean, if you go to your concierge desk, the concierge desk at a hotel might just tell you, here's a list of the bars,
yes.
and you're on your own.
And you're on your own.
So, and we did have a volunteer. I have to say, I have a great group of volunteers. I had one volunteer call concierge desks beginning on Wednesday or Thursday, giving them information about the switchboard. I had another volunteer who was headed downtown to deliver Arts in Houston magazine today. Mm-hmm. He dropped off a lot of flyers and switchboard information and magnets to all of the hotels. So we're trying to get this information out there. We've got some volunteers tomorrow who are going to be taking our flyers around to all of the bars, hopefully to the coffee shops.
Sure.
Any place where any of the evacuees may chance to see it so
yeah.
that they will have that information.
Okay. That's great. Let's get some of the people involved. I know you've got more, because my mind is flying. Yes, because I was remembering Chase, who was talking about, you know, we're going to, he's an evacuee, and he said, we're going to be here for months,
right.
if not forever. And thank you for all the kindness that you've shown me, but, you know, in a couple of months, we're going to be looking for jobs.
Exactly.
And so that job thing is going to be very, very important.
Well, and at the meeting tonight, Tim Brookover had said that, I know that the community center, see, New Orleans has its own lesbian and gay community
mm-hmm.
center, and the likelihood of people from New Orleans, if they're looking for this information, if they pick up the gay and lesbian yellow pages or just the regular news yellow pages, they'll probably look for information under the community center. That
mm-hmm.
might be their first point of contact, not
You're right.
knowing that we have the gay and lesbian switchboard.
That's right.
So,
That's right.
So you know, we are working very closely with the community center. They're looking for volunteers to staff their telephones, and that's another thing that we do is when people call and say, how can I help? We can say, well, if you've got some time, they could use some help over at the community center.
You bet they could.
So, but the community center we learned tonight from Tim Brookover was that they were going to be putting together a job bank
mm-hmm.
that's going to be available through their website,
Good.
And they offer meeting space. And I think they said that they'll offer internet access and that sort of thing for any evacuees who need that type of service.
That's right. Thomas Street Clinic is also providing services for anyone who needs them. And they primarily take care of HIV.
Persons who are HIV positive,
yeah.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's where everybody is streamlined right now in terms of getting their medications covered through Ryan White and that sort
sure.
of thing. I don't know all of the particulars, and I'm sure, I'm positive that Katie and anybody else over at Montrose Clinic would have that information.
Oh, my God. And, you know, that is so important that they're providing all kinds of medications. If I was in this same predicament, I'm an epileptic. I have to have Dilantin.
Oh,
or
okay.
I go into seizures. You know, I cannot be without it. So, to run out of something like that.
Exactly. Or asthma medication.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's really wonderful.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We've got some people in the talk studio. I see Falcon.
Yay.
Hey, Falcon. Who's next to you?
President of the Cult 45, Stephen Bunch.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey.
What, no kilt?
No.
Damn.
Gotta get that kilt back.
Okay. And Gigi is here. And you've brought a friend.
Yes.
My name is Benjamin Wells.
Yes. Benjamin and Jamie Joy showed up at my house at midnight last night.
Yes.
From New Orleans.
From New Orleans.
And so we'll be going to him a little later. And
yeah, I want to hear all about that.
Yes. His experience. Well, their experience.
Yeah, I know a lot of us have
chilling.
Have been glued to Channel 76 on Time Warner Cable.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily believe much of what they're saying, though.
Really?
It's a shame, but the media's not really...
Well, I'm not talking CNN. Oh, okay, because this is a small, looks like a community television station coming out of Baton Rouge.
Yeah, it's being covered over pretty well.
Actually, what I saw a little bit of their coverage tonight, and what they were trying to point out was that there were a lot of really heartwarming stories coming out of the New Orleans area.
They were also talking about the shooting and the rapes going on.
Mm-hmm. But the particular story that I heard today was that, that's being overinflated, and that it's giving people the impression that it's completely lawless down there. Now, I have seen a lot of images and that sort of thing, but...
Yeah.
Completely lawless isn't even the... doesn't even begin to describe the conditions in New Orleans.
Wow.
The police are pretty much hiding in a hotel.
Yeah, martial law is what...
Yeah.
Yeah, but the marshals didn't get there until today. Hello.
They're all in Iraq.
Okay, yeah. let's get on to some of the other services that are going on. I know, because there are services, and I know there are groups that are holding fundraisers.
And if those groups would let us know at the switchboard where they're holding their fundraisers and when they're holding them, I love the idea of Hamburger-rama. I love that idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
And so if they let us know that information, and I know that Chris, on a website that he hosts, has a lot of that information as well, but if they let us know at the switchboard, then we can pass along that information as well.
What are the Colt 45s up to?
Well, starting tomorrow from 2 to 8 p.m., Daddy Rose Smith, who is the chairperson of our ATF fund, is putting on basically a show, fundraiser, donation center, all rolled into one. The idea of it is we're going to start at 2 o'clock. We're going to have the Greggs serving food, which they're going to donate everything from the food sales to... our fund, and also all the bartenders, I assume all the bartenders, are donating their tips to us also. I'm going to set up
The Greggs and Devin.
Rose, Greggs, and Devin, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm setting up a kind of like a donation center on the dance floor of EJ's.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have like a hygiene section, food, non-perishable food section, clothing section, blankets, towels. DJ Poppy from EJ's created a wonderful flyer that, you know, we actually just got to see it today.
Is this it?
Actually, that's mine. That's the pitiful one.
Excuse me.
Actually, it's a two-pager, and on the second page, and I'm going to send this out on the internet tonight, but on the second page, it gives a wonderful list of everything that these evacuees will need.
Yes.
Hygiene products, clothes, miscellaneous items like batteries and gift certificates, phone cards, bus passes, pillows. I'm basically going to go to my storage unit tomorrow morning and clean it out because I've got a whole bunch of this stuff in there.
Yeah.
I don't need it. Why should I pay for my storage unit and store all this
stuff?
There
you go.
Get rid of it. Donate it.
Sure.
We're a 501c3 charity organization, so it's all tax deductible.
Okay. This is the Colt 45s putting on a special from 2 to 8 tomorrow. And, or today, rather, at EJ's. Now, EJ is located on Ralph Street, right across the side street from Mark's restaurant there on Westheimer.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the fund. It's going to the Katrina Relief Fund, which is part of the Till Thacker Fund.
Yes.
Which allows for what?
Colt 45 has always worked more as a last resort organization. What we're doing is we're trying to bring in a whole bunch of money and 2 months, 3 months down the road when government subsidies run out, we hope that we're going to be there to provide emergency assistance for people who are going to need it for the medications and stuff.
Sure.
So that's basically what we're going for.
Okay, okay.
So it's going to be distributed through the Till Thacker Fund.
So bring toys for the kids, bring personal hygiene products, bring, you know, whatever, and come spend a few bucks, have fun, and it's a fundraiser. And I understand that there may be some a drag queen or two throughout the day doing a little something on the stage.
Well, I don't know about that, but we'll find out.
Okay. Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got anything else going on that you want to talk about?
Not really. Daddy Rose just had her Bare Bones Benefits show, which went off without a hitch. It was
a
great show.
Yeah, that was very nice.
Yeah. Raised quite a bit of money for the ATF fund. This was last weekend.
Yeah, AIDS Trouble Fund.
The AIDS Trouble Fund.
And that was over at the BRB, of course.
Correct.
Yeah. It seems like BRB and EJ's, those are the two big ones for fundraisers.
Yes.
These days.
They're very supportive.
Now, there are a lot of other bars that do fundraisers, but I hear EJ's and the BRB the most, I think.
Yes. Well, Keys West.
Keys, oh, absolutely. Keys West, what am I thinking? Yeah, because they've got stuff going on every Sunday.
I think there's a lot of bars. Mary's does a lot of fundraisers.
Yeah, every Wednesday at Mary's.
Every Wednesday through ICOH. Mm-hmm. And Michael's Outpost, we go over there every once in a while for a fundraiser. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, the bars, they're there to help us no matter what. I was being told today by some people from New Orleans that this is probably the best city for raising funds, and knowing that, you know, the word drag queen, of course, but female impressionist.
Being one your own self all the time.
Once in a while. But they really do, they don't keep any of the tips for themselves. They really do contribute it back to the community.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and I haven't seen that really in any other city.
Yeah, I hear that a lot, too, from people from out of town. They're amazed because in their cities, when a female impersonator is on the stage, it's you keep the tips. And here, in this city, when that happens, it's so unusual.
It's almost insulting, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen anymore. You know, it's always a fundraiser for something. But so many groups are refocusing their fundraisers right now for relief victims, for the evacuees from New Orleans.
Right.
Okay.
So,
anything else going on?
The only other announcement I really have is, you know, we always have our AIDS Trouble Fund, which is every Tuesday of the month. General membership meeting is the second Tuesday of the month. Bartending is the third Sunday of the month.
I was going to ask you about that, you know, about fundraising things, because I knew you did bartending, and when is that?
That's going to be the third Sunday in September at EJ's. And on a side note, because I am kind of married to the Misfits vice president.
Oh, absolutely. You can talk about those, too. Yeah.
We do have the Misfits Ball coming up on September 25th. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at Numbers, and it's going to be the locker room lockdown.
Ooh.
So,
we're your favorite jock.
Yeah. But that's about as far as community announcements for me.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of things going on in the community as far as raising money and assistance coming through. A lot of volunteers from, like, the Diana Foundation, Crew of Olympus, Orisa's, ICOH. I mean, everybody's pulling together for Katrina and trying to help the evacuees make their lives a little bit better.
Okay, why don't you hold on and hang around for a minute, because we've got John on line one, two.
Oh, okay.
John. Hello. Hello, John.
Oh.
Hello, John.
Yes, hello.
Finally, we hit all the right buttons.
Oh, okay. Sorry I couldn't make it up there. Sinuses and throat. Not feeling too good.
I want to thank you for putting together this meeting tonight. It was incredible.
I just went by the ripcord to let Chris know to get the message to y'all if I couldn't get through that I wouldn't be making it there.
Mm-hmm.
And talked with Jody over by the door. Let Sally know we need a bunch more copies of the resources for GLBT hurricane evacuees.
I just made copies.
You made copies.
Yes,
great.
Sally's here with me.
Because blue books are disappearing like crazy. All the information that was at the front bar, at the front door, at the bar. Everybody's picking up information. So,
good.
It did.
Tomorrow, if anybody needs help getting this information out to the bars, I'll be glad to volunteer and do a bar hop and get everything stocked up.
That'd be great, because we need people to do that tomorrow.
So apparently, I see a lot of new faces at the Ripcord this evening. It doesn't look like the regular crowd, and I'm guessing that a lot of them are from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with fundraising stuff, Fire Dancers Houston on Sunday from 6 to 9, we're going to be having steak night, and all our proceeds from steak night at the Ripcord out on the back patio will be going to the relief effort.
Okay, how much is it?
$10 for steak, baked potato, salad, and usually we have some extras with that, and so we're going to be seeing what we can do with the steak night.
Night at the Rip, and, you know, hey, it's for a good cause.
And it's cook your own steak, so we do have some good steaks there, and it'll be a good way for people to sit around in the afternoon and socialize and talk and network and get things going.
Get your meat hot.
Yeah.
Okay.
John, why don't you tell everybody about the news group that you set up?
Okay. We've got a Yahoo group that we started up. It's called Houston Rainbow Cross. And we're trying to gather information on that so people from other cities and all can get online and find out what services are being provided in Houston. Sally's emailed me some information. We're going to be trying to set up the files in there to where if people are looking for certain resources, they'll know what to get. So Sally's able to handle stuff with the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. With us, we're hoping to help do this with the Internet. And also the Houston Big Men's Club is using part of their website for this information, too. The more information we can get out, and the more people will be able to access it. I know a lot of these people from New Orleans aren't going to have computers, but they're probably going to be staying with friends. And then, too, if service agencies know about us and they're able to lend these people some computer time, we'll be able to get the word out and what we're doing here in Houston.
Well, and in addition to that, we've been sending out information to new different listservs that serve New Orleans, like the Southern Decadence listserv and that sort of thing. Even though a lot of those people might not be able to have access to the computer, they may be able to be in touch with other people around the country, people that they know from these different groups. And so those people can say, hey, I saw it on the listserv. I know you can't get to a computer right now, but, you know, that's why we're trying to send that information to all of the GLBT listservs that we found in the New Orleans area.
And right now I do not know what the resources will be. The Montrose Community Center.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly if we, again, this is a project we haven't really talked about, but possibly if we can get some extra computers donated or a person has an old computer where we can get online, we're going to see what we can do about trying to set up some kind of little computer bank to where people will be able to go by the counseling center and get online to try communicating with family and friends. And, again, it's communications. Within 24 hours of putting out an email about the meeting, I'd already gotten calls from California and New York City, so the Internet's a very valuable tool for us to use to get this information out on what we're doing. Also, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, there's chatter going on to where they will also try following suit with what Houston's doing, because we're going to be overwhelmed soon. I understand there's 70,000 refugees coming in, and a good percentage or small percentage of that will be GBLT, so we're going to be needing some help here, and people are even offering their homes up in the Dallas-Fort Worth, Austin area, and places in between. So everybody wants to help, and we just need to make sure that we've got an avenue to be able to help them and or let them help others.
Mary has called in and wanted to remind folks that of all of the things that are needed, underwear is another one. It's one we didn't cover. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't think about it until you need it.
Right. That's another one of the things that we're going to try to offer through the Counseling Center, and we are accepting donations for it, and that is case management services. I mean, we already offer case management for our clients who are HIV positive, but we don't have funding currently, and we've been taking donations, and with those donations, we'll be able to offer case management to the evacuees, so they don't have to be HIV positive. And by case management, that means we can help them access transportation services. We can get them hooked up with bus tokens, if they need gas vouchers, if they need clothing vouchers to buy things like underwear and a change of clothes,
mm-hmm.
Food vouchers, that sort of thing. We can get them in touch with that, too.
Okay.
Also, one other thing,
sure.
And I've gotten a couple emails since the meeting this evening. Even though people might not be injured or hurt, maybe they've got a place to stay, even though they aren't going to feel they might not need to go through the Red Cross, I've been told by organizations that what they need to do is register with the Red Cross, and that'll be able to set them up for getting in with FEMA and being able to get assistance. Because a lot of them have lost their homes. They don't know when they're going to be able to go back. They can't stay in a hotel for the duration. And if they call the Red Cross and let them know that they've been displaced by the storm,
mm-hmm.
and give them some information. I don't know what the exact process is. I tried getting a hold of the Red Cross, and things are just so backed up over there.
Sure.
They're doing the best they can. But if people can register with the Red Cross, I understand that also goes and registers them with FEMA. That way they'll be able to start getting some finances coming in or vouchers for food and clothing, et cetera.
Okay. Okay, have been handed a sheet of paper here. If you want to get in touch with the American Red Cross, it's 1-866-GET-INFO. GETINFO. And FEMA is 621 FEMA, FEMA. And United Way of the Gulf Coast.
Yes, you can dial 211
yes.
from most telephones, but not all cell phones are
That's
hooked
right.
into the United Way directory system. And if you don't have access to 211, you can dial the United Way at 713-957-HELP.
Right.
H-E-L-P.
Thank you. Thank you. John, that was an incredible meeting, and it was great to have all of these organizations there sharing information and letting the ones who do what they do best do what they do.
Well, I'm glad everybody showed up.
Mm-hmm.
I heard some comments after the meeting that this reminded people of the mid-'80s when the community used to rally together when HIV and AIDS was hitting us so hard, so fast.
You bet.
So it was wonderful seeing agencies and organizations sitting down in one room with one goal, and there's a lot of people out there that have been, in one way or another, helping out other people for 2 decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice seeing everybody there working together, pulling together. Sally, I want to thank you so much for getting that database set up for the housing, because when the phone calls start coming in, I'm thinking, how the heck are we going to handle this?
I know, and we already have probably about 50 people that have offered to, and people have called from California, Phoenix, Arizona, Kansas City, Missouri, Orlando. I mean, they're calling from how they got the information, I don't know. I'm just grateful because I know that people to their city and state so that they can get into housing. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing what we've been able to put together in such a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
thanks to a couple of phone calls.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Yes,
no problem. Like I said, Allison went and got us flooded a little bit. I had 1 foot of water in place. I know how devastating that was for me. I can in no way imagine what these people are going through. And if I can, and like everybody else is saying, if there's anything we can do to help, let's do it. So we've got a base set up right now and give these people a little bit of a stable foundation to stand on to where they can start moving forward with their grieving process, trying to analyze what they're going to do with their life now. So it's going to be a tough run, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be needing services at the Counseling Center, and I'm glad they've already got the program set up for this Tuesday, I believe.
The support group is this Tuesday, right?
Yes.
Right. So I want to thank everybody for all your help and showing up at the meetings, and it was just wonderful.
And we're going to be putting that information out tonight and every week.
Yes.
Yes.
Sounds great, guys. Well, I'm going to get going and lay down again. My throat's killing me and my sinuses are bothering me. So thank you so much for all your help and get the word out on this, and we'll just keep working at it. Keep it going.
John, thank you so very much for calling in.
Okay, y'all take care.
Hope you feel better.
Oh, I'm working. I've got my antibiotics.
Oh, there we go.
And now that he mentioned, yes. It's hard to imagine what it's like, and that's partly why I brought Ben up here to tell the story. What was it like coming out of New Orleans? Tell us a little bit about just the whole experience from when you realized you first had to leave. What happened?
Well, the night of the hurricane, Sunday night, early Monday morning, everything seemed okay. We had a little bit of street flooding in my area. I went out and cleared some of the drains out around the block to make sure that all the leaves were out of the way so it could drain properly. And the water subsided. I went to bed that evening and had no electricity. Phone was still kind of working, but it wasn't much of a problem because I've slept in hotter bedrooms, I'm sure. The next morning, I heard my neighbors talking very loudly because it was only the two of us in maybe a four-block area that had stayed, my partner and I, and this other family next door who were on a second-story apartment. I went outside to see what was going on, and the water was to the first step on our porch. We live in a shotgun, and it's raised up about 2 feet. And then it's 2 feet higher from the foundation of the house to the floor, but the water was rising. They said an inch an hour, and it was actually more about 6 inches an hour. Apparently, I don't think they will ever own up to it, but in my honest opinion, that a levee was breached in an area where they could try and get some of the water back out that had been dumped into the city in other areas, because there was about a 3-block breach that they said a barge had run into and had caused flooding. Barges can't really fit in that canal, so I don't see how it was breached by a barge, but, you know, nevertheless.
But even still, what was it like? When did you first realize you had to leave?
Well, it was an hour and a half later. I saw water coming up through the floor in the bathroom because I realized that it was almost coming up through the floor heater, because living in such an old house, it was built in 1906, you don't have central air.
And how did you get out?
We cut a hole in the screen for our cat to get out because I didn't see it feasible to put the animal through that much stress. I didn't know what we were going to be facing. And we locked up the house. Everything was up as high as we could put it. And we went from my porch around the front to my neighbor's porch and just dropped off into the water. I tested it first because I'm 6'1", but my partner, on the other hand, is 5'3". And I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to have to carry her on my back. And if so, to make sure that I could do it a long enough distance to get myself and her out of the neighborhood safely. I dropped down into the water, and it was about up to my waist. And dropped her down into the water and made sure that she was okay. We had one bag of belongings and the clothes that we were wearing. We had a bag with our medication in it and some other things.
Yeah.
Valuables and some money, which I didn't know if it would be possible to use the money, but it actually was, because we bought a few packs of cigarettes right when we got out of the neighborhood. Two blocks away.
Calm the nerves.
Yeah, two blocks away, the water had subsided enough, or hadn't risen enough to cause any flooding right there where we were at.
Yeah.
Maybe up to the ankle. I mean, it wasn't really so bad.
Well, now you mentioned that at points at night everything was dark and you heard gunfire near
pitch
you
black.
And didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. There were people that were looting. And the cops were actually opening up, which was one probably the only good thing I can say about the police in New Orleans through this disaster is that they were opening up Rite Aids and Walgreens and grocery stores to let people in so that they could get food and water.
What they needed.
And basic amenities or, you know, things that they wanted that would kind of calm them down. But there were people looting televisions.
Yeah, things you really don't
VCRs, DVD players, bicycles which you can't ride in 4 feet of water. You know, things that were completely unnecessary. And I guess the police, because it was martial law, had orders to shoot on sight. Also, like at one point, I was walking with a stick because when we had to walk through the water, I wanted to see what was in front of me. And to make sure that more of my partner didn't fall down, because if I put it out of mind, then I don't step on broken glass kind of thing.
They don't know what's out there in front of you.
And we fell one time over a sign that had blown off of the Hyatt, which I don't even know how many stories tall. It's a huge sign. We tripped and fell over it right as we were coming off the steps of this building. And
and how far did you have to go through water, and how long? Seemed like forever, huh?
Jeez, I think we walked about 5 hours going downtown from where we were at to, he's not my blood brother, but my little brother, pretty much, and his partner, who are very close friends of ours, to the French Quarter. We walked through waist-high water about 4 hours, 5 hours.
This was right after the storm?
This was the next day.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were, and that's when I saw the first dead bodies. Sorry, it's a little difficult to...
Yeah, that's something that never gets here on there.
I grew up in a rough neighborhood and have seen death. It's not something new to me, so I can handle it pretty well. But to see the amount of, especially elderly and children, within one day, I believe, an elderly gentleman and an elderly lady that was shot by the police because... And someone had said it was a man that went crazy banging on the hood of the car. What had happened was this elderly woman, she was 92 years old, was banging on the car because she didn't understand that her house was gone. She did not speak English, really. She spoke Spanish, and I speak just enough Spanish to embarrass myself. And my partner, fortunately, speaks enough to... She was trying to explain to the water that the woman that her house was underwater. Well, we brought her. She was left in the middle of the street in the gutter, pretty much. Just left laying there. Could not get up. I think her hip was broken. We got her up, got a police officer to, which was so gracious of them, pick her up, throw her in the back of a truck, and drive us a couple blocks to the convention center, not even close enough to really get her into the convention center, and told, you know, have a nice day, and drove off. She did not understand that her house was gone and kept trying to get someone's attention to say, hey, take me home. I live at this address. And the police, when they pulled up, or I guess, arrived because of some altercation. They were trying to keep everyone calm. She was banging on the police car, and they opened fire on her. There were two babies, I believe an 8-month-old and a 2-year-old, that died, that were inside the convention center that they had wrapped up. A 10-year-old girl that I believe was over two nights raped repeatedly. There were bodies pretty much everywhere. Everyone at the convention center was told that there were 500 buses on their way to pick people up and two ships that were coming from here, I believe, is what they were told. And for 3 days, people were being told this and basically sitting there without food or water. Anything by the convention center had already been looted to the point where
there was nothing
left. And people at one point were chanting every time any vehicle would drive by. We're chanting, help us, help us, help us. The first night we were there, which was, I believe, Wednesday night, or, yes, Wednesday night is Friday now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I haven't really got my bearings. I believe Wednesday night was the first night we were there. They had electricity in the convention center. Basically, the doors were unlocked. National Guardsmen were put where they didn't want people to go. And they had M16s trained on you if you came close to the doors.
Herding you around.
No, just standing there blocking off sections that they didn't want people in, that I believe city officials were in.
Yeah.
And everyone else was just pretty much set free to run amok throughout the buildings. We broke into the catering area and borrowed quite a bit of food and and water. There was the one of the positive things I saw. It was absolutely amazing. There was a man who, with his family, took it upon himself to feed people. He had a grill set up, and as long as there was charcoal, was grilling food, making shish kebabs, hot dogs, hamburgers, anything he could make, and giving them out to people. And he said, you know, I'm Rastafarian, I don't even eat meat, but want to make sure that people have protein.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
take it to Houston.
I usually take it, make it a point not to ride in stolen vehicles, but but considering it's such a horrific, horrible place to be right now, my partner and I got in the back of a truck with 10 other people, a baby and a dog, and found out that it was stolen after we were on the road, pretty much. I didn't really care at that point, and I still don't. And, you know, he said he would, I guess, return it to the people that he stole it from whenever he got the chance. But it was pouring down raining.
It's borrowed, not really stolen.
Yeah.
It was pouring down raining, and we were all cramped in the back trying to hold a tarp on. And
oh, my God.
The tarp was flying off because of the wind pressure and ripped off at one point, and then we basically had to pull it down over ourselves. And I unfortunately could not get the tarp over myself because I was holding it down for other people. But that was the least of my concerns. We were doing 80 down the highway, pretty much.
And how bad was the road system?
What road system?
Exactly.
I mean, there are roads.
Right.
There are streets. It was actually kind of funny to see.
Way in and out.
Yeah. It was kind of funny to see. I believe it was a Range Rover and a brand new Infiniti that had been parked in front of this building, and all the bricks had fallen down on top of it.
Oh.
I saw that in the news, actually.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, it's like the whole side of the building just collapsed right on it.
And I think it's funny for the simple fact that it was either done for insurance purposes, or if not, was just the worst luck, because to look at it, it looked like something that could only be planned. And there was a sign, which is, I will never forget the sign going up St. Charles Avenue that said, don't try it. I'm inside sleeping with a big dog, an ugly woman, two shotguns, and a claw hammer.
Whoa.
That's all.
Whoa.
Don't mess with this house.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that really strikes me in all this, and I've talked to, well, we've talked a little bit, when Jamie Joy and Ben first showed up at the house, they had had very little sleep over the last 3 days, 4 days. I think they were both a little bit in shock. We got them in, got them their first, I think, hot meal.
Yeah. Which I'd like to thank you again, by the way.
And then we got them to bed, and they slept a good part of today.
Mm-hmm.
I think they both needed a lot of rest after
all
that.
I'm still worn out, but I figure people need to know.
And I'm really happy that you're here telling me.
I really would like to thank the city of Houston, especially the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, for welcoming us, because it really feels like our city abandoned us when we needed them most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
fully your city. I mean,
it wasn't your city. It was just
federal government.
A situation where the worst of human emotions came out.
Mm-hmm.
And our mayor was stationed somewhere else, mm-hmm, with electricity, with all amenities, and did a flyby assessment.
Oh.
All the rest of the city officials, with the exception of a couple, I'm sure, were in places where it was okay and brought in by helicopter to do assessments.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we pretty much were abandoned by our city.
Speaking of city officials, Larry Bonneries was here tonight.
Larry Bagnaris.
Yes.
Larry is actually a good friend of my partner and I.
Oh, okay. He calls himself Bagnaris now, but it used to be Bonneries, and he just got tired of people not being able to pronounce it, so he just goes by Bagnaris now.
I'm glad to know that he's out of the city.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes. I saw him tonight. He was at the meeting over at EJ's. Mm-hmm. I was happy to see him, too. I met Larry in the late 60s here in Houston when he was still here.
Ooh.
And we were both very young, and he was very pretty.
Oh, he's still a looker.
Oh, he is a looker. He is a looker.
If you happen to see him again anytime soon,
mm-hmm,
let him know that Ben and Jamie Joy send their love to him.
I will. If he isn't listening.
Yeah.
He may be.
Hi, Larry.
Jeremy, I want to remind you, we've still got the Leather Boys out there.
Oh, so. I know it. They want to come in and talk about what they're up to.
I guess we need to wrap up this part pretty soon. But
one or two more things that will only take a minute.
No, take all the time you need.
Yeah.
But before you do, I need to remind folks that they're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, right here on good old KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. And down there in Galveston Way, you're on 89.5 FM.
And the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
That's right.
Yes.
People all over the world are listening to this this station right now.
I wish you hadn't told me that. I have really bad stage fright. But basically, I just want to let people know, and an email has been sent out, I believe, mm-hmm, you and Julie had written...
mm-hmm,
to the pagan community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pagan community's jumping in, and they're getting a caravan to go down and pick up people that haven't been able to get rides out of there.
I want to let anybody know who has decided to go to New Orleans to do any sort of rescue work or any sort of relief work, because if the pagan community is doing it, I figure that there are other people who are going to want to do the same thing,
mm-hmm,
and help.
Be aware, New Orleans is completely destroyed. It is not in any way a city
the way anyone remembers
it. It's not the way that any city, probably not the way you've ever seen any sort of area, unless you've been to other areas that have needed serious relief.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so sad, because like you had said, your house was built in 1909?
1906, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the history behind New Orleans.
Completely
from way
gone.
Back, yeah,
yeah.
It's just,
mm-hmm,
devastating.
But the other important thing, if you drive down there, take extra gas, because they are out of gas when you get near
there. We have no electricity, so no gas pumps are working. We have, unless you siphon it from a car, you're not getting gasoline. Even if you do, chances are it's already been filled with water, and you know you might end up ruining your vehicle. Do not take nice vehicles if you can help it in any way, because there are carjackers,
mm-hmm,
at the ramps in New Orleans trying to jack cars either to get out of the city or just because there are gangs of armed thugs going around the city carjacking people because there is no law.
Yeah.
What New Orleans really needs more than anything, first and foremost, is water.
Yes.
Period. Water is the first necessity. Diapers, baby formula, because the Red Cross are not there. The Salvation Army are not there. There
they
is nobody.
The refugees that are out around.
The refugees, and I appreciate them for that,
mm-hmm,
and I'm not knocking them in any way, but there is no one in New Orleans helping New Orleans.
The people that are still
the National Guard that are located there are exactly that, to guard the nation, not necessarily to bring relief to anyone. Which, if you go, know that chances are you will be put on detail by whoever is in charge, which there really isn't anyone in charge particularly, because I had a 16-year-old kid pull an M16 on me, asking me what I was doing with a walking stick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah, I got a little short with him. You know?
Wow.
So you, if you were at all squeamish, first of all, if you're at all squeamish, don't even bother going to the city. Do whatever you can to help here and other places that they're giving relief to. You will be encountering a lot of death.
Yeah.
If you are HIV positive, stay away from New Orleans. Stay away from the Astrodome. Yeah. Because there is likely to be a cholera outbreak. And who knows how many people in the dome might have TB.
Right. Also, hepatitis C. Yes. Hepatitis C is another one. If you have hepatitis C, don't go anywhere near...
No, do other things to help, but don't do those two things.
Believe me,
the Montrose Counseling Center is doing so much for helping the.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that there are plenty of ways to help without having to actually go to the Astrodome, because the Astrodome, just to be out of New Orleans, I'm so thankful, and I can't even believe that what's happened has happened. It's so surreal to me, and I'm a surrealist at heart, that I keep thinking that I'm sleeping.
That's because surreality has become reality.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And when that's the reality, there is no sanity to anything that anyone is doing. There's so many people in shock. If you go there, be prepared to, if you have... A registered handgun or a registered any sort of rifle or anything like that. I don't know if you need to register them here in the city and the state of Texas.
Yes,
rifles and things.
You do.
Okay. Make sure you bring your paperwork with you.
Oh.
If you're going to bring your just to be on the safe side.
Right.
But if you do have a handgun, you might want to bring it with you.
And your license.
And your license and everything for it. Practice at the shooting range. This is all I can say, because the police were shooting people from a rooftop that were looting, just picking them off. As
probably
the
just to stay out of New Orleans.
Yeah. As the jail was flooding, inmates were breaking the windows out and jumping out. And as they were jumping out,
they were all on the
as
overpass.
They were jumping out, the police were shooting them as they were jumping out the windows. On the overpass. They were shooting them because they were trying to jump off the side and commit suicide.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Big Chris has just arrived, fresh from the ripcord.
I wouldn't say fresh, darling.
No. Yeah, actually, you're pretty gamey. But
look a little worn.
So you were slinging hamburgers over there at the ripcord. How'd you do?
We raised $320 in cash and $100 in gift cards.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
That's going to the Convergence 2005
that
Hurricane
is incredible.
Katrina Fund.
Yes.
And I have to thank the people, the customers over at the ripcord. People were coming in. They may not have wanted a burger, but, you know, they tipped, and they tipped generously.
Evidently.
And, you know... As tired as we are, we're going to do it in 2 more weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go out and sling burgers, and we're going to do some other things in between. But and we'll get into kind of why we're doing that here come later on the roundtable.
Okay.
That, because we also have another story of talking about with Louisiana Connection on here.
Okay.
So I need to catch my breath and
okay,
down
that's
at
fine.
Least this Gatorade.
We've got some weather boys that are waiting in the wings that want to come on and talk about some. We ought to take a break from Katrina for just a little bit, and
we got some on CD.
We do. We have actually we have something in the cassette deck and the CD player. Let's go to the CD. That is a men's chorus.
All right.
That CD is right up there.
Hand him the CD so he can see what it is.
I'm sorry. This is the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles playing a very inspirational song. It's not new. It's been around for a long time, and it always gives me goosebumps.
It's a good song.
We'll be back in just a few.
There comes a time when you just gotta rise. You've been down so long, you can't remember why. There comes a time when you just gotta stand. You realize inside someone will give you a helping hand. You gotta stand.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming out of queers. Homophobes have trampled on our rights, they've done so out of fear. We have loosed our rising anger, and now it's plainly clear that gays are marching on. Glory, glory, I'm a lesbian. Glory, glory, I'm a gay man. Glory, glory, I'm a homosexual. I am truth marching on. In our homes and on street corners, we have been condemned to die. We were murdered in the Holocaust by Hitler and his lies. AIDS is killing all our people whom the government denies. But gays keep marching on. Glory, glory, I'm a lesbian. Glory, glory, I'm a gay man. Glory, glory, I'm a homosexual. I am truth marching on. In the beauty of our loving, we have let ourselves be free. We will heal our wounds for justice for all humanity. We will not deny our freedom or our sexuality. We will keep marching on. Glory, glory, I'm a lesbian. Glory.
Zakari with Glory Glory. And before that, the
The Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles.
With There Comes a Time. Both wonderful songs. It kind of matches the mood I'm in right now.
Yeah, it's a weird mood. I've kind of been hooked this past week. I've kind of been telling people I've been in this 9/12 mood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after 9/11, you sat at home.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely,
you know,
it's the same thing.
I think I broke my recall button on my remote control going between
76
CNN and Fox.
Yeah,
and then with recently discovering Channel 76. Wonderful thing that
only on Time Warner.
Only Time Warner. You did mention about that, about the station earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I said the only bad part that I don't like about it is you got to crank that volume up. Like every 15 or 20 seconds, there's this big static pop.
Oh, I don't have that on mine.
Okay, I guess it's just on mine, but it drives me nuts out there in suburbia. It's like, you know, because you have to crank it up to hear the people's voice. Then when that static pop comes,
mm-hmm.
it's like the level of a normal station.
Okay.
So, but, you know, it's a wonderful thing that they're doing that and getting some information out to the people who are displaced. And
yeah.
We met a lot of them over at the Ripcord and at EJ's there.
Yeah, we figured that a lot of gay people, GLBT people, when they came to Houston, they would look for a gay bar first.
That's what those one guys did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was, you know, in a way you could say, you know, going to the old revival words, you know, it was powerful testimony. I forget the man's name who stood up and said, you know, he came to Houston.
Chase.
Okay. Came to Houston and, you know, found a gay bar. And, you know, when we talk about community, and, you know, people may disregard and diss the bar culture, but
it's where we started.
God help us.
The first place we were able to congregate as a people.
And the fact that, you know, that's going to be the spot now. That
mm-hmm.
is where this grassroots coalition
yep.
is coming from. It's the public service providers, and it is us barfly organizations
mm-hmm.
that are coming together. And I think what we're going to see here is, you know, they were talking at the meeting about how, you know, the mainstream press isn't paying attention. Well, they're going to have to when they start seeing this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
You know.
We're back with Gigi.
Yes.
Hi, honey.
Oh, doing good.
And you've got some friends with you.
Oh, yes. But before we get to them, I want to do a quick little thing on the Radical Fairy Gathering that we're having coming up.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I've got some good news. I talked to the owner of the property where we have the campground.
Yeah.
And he said that he's going to not charge me for any hurricane victims that want to attend this event.
Wonderful.
And we're also going to feed them, anybody mm-hmm. that has come from Louisiana or the affected area, you can come to the fairy gathering free of
Mississippi
charge.
Mississippi or Alabama.
You'll have food. We've got extra tents.
Florida Panhandle.
And we're going to be doing some special workings,
mm-hmm.
just bonding, getting spiritual, getting into some really good male energy, sex energy, love energy, and spirit energy. And so it's going to be quite an event. It's going to be at High Rock Ranch. And if you're interested in coming and need to be comped, email me at buyhouse@houston.rr.com.
That's BIHOUSE.
Yes.
Okay. At.
Sorry, my mind was up late last night.
Okay, buyhouse at
houston.rr.com.
Okay. I just handed you a piece of paper. Because it was a little prayer that came across the internet by a pagan.
May your body be blessed.
May you be peaceful and joyful, and recognize that your senses are sacred thresholds. May your senses always enable you to celebrate the universe and the mystery and possibilities in your presence here. May the eras of Earth bless you. By John Donahue.
Yeah. Donahue?
Okay. Oh, Donahue.
Okay.
And I'd like to welcome my guests. We have the Houston Leather Boys with us
Hey.
And our president, Robert's here with us.
Mm-hmm.
And
hello. Good evening.
I want to just kind of go around and introduce. And I'm so bad. My mind is just scattered. I haven't had much sleep, so let's go with names.
Our vice chair, Darren.
Hi.
And our secretary, Tony, is here.
Hello.
We heard you.
And then I'm here.
And Gigi is one of our members,
and I'm B-O-I.
You're a B-O-Y-I.
Yes. Yes, that's about right. And, of course, we've got our usual bisexual crew here.
David Great Bear, as I go by.
Yes.
Robin.
Kim.
Hi, Robin.
Wolf. Yeah. So welcome, everybody. Who are the Houston Leather Boys, and what are we all about?
The Houston Leather Boys, basically, it's part of the leather community. You have doms, you have subs. Some
Ooh,
subs.
I like that.
I know you do. You have subs that classify themselves as slaves, boys, BOYs, which are male, BOIs, which are female, BOYIs,
that are GG.
And then you also just have your traditional sub. Mm-hmm. So, and basically the whole concept of it, our club and our organization is to provide brotherhood, education, learning, friendship, a support network for other subs in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So they can learn and understand
And I think learning
protocols.
Is so important, especially in the gay bars, leather
mm-hmm.
bars.
So many
people got to know a little bit about protocol.
Yeah, so many people get in trouble because they don't know mm-hmm. the leather lifestyle, and they think, oh, well, if I put on a pair of chaps and go out to the bar, I'm leather. No. There is a lot of leather protocol. There is a lot of hierarchical structure.
What is protocol? For someone that doesn't know.
Leather protocols is basically a set of rules that we live by, which is giving and receiving respect from people, from each other. Subs always defer to a dom. In public protocols, you have public protocols and you have family protocols, personal,
right.
private protocols. So we can touch on public protocols, personal protocols, family protocols. They
That's
vary from family to family, and we don't even want to go there. That is their individual family.
Public yeah. protocol would be more like etiquette. Public
yeah.
etiquette.
It's really just mm-hmm. public etiquette, respecting
yeah.
the space, knowing how to approach, when not to, what to say, what not to say.
Yeah.
It's common courtesy, opening doors for a dom, lighting their cigarette. If they need a beer, go get their beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's making sure that they are wanting for nothing and they are being felt like they're being taken care of.
And
it's just, you know, the joy of serving, and you get the fulfillment from actually helping them and serving them and making sure that they are doing all right, because they give you just as much in return in different ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the activities the Houston Leather Boys get into? Ooh, a wicked question.
Are we talking in the bars, or are we talking personal?
Any kind
you
want.
Anything you want to share.
Yeah, okay. Anything that I want, you can hear on my music. I write songs about that kind of stuff.
You sure do.
Publicly, we like to get together. We like to socialize. We go out. We like to be seen. That way, if there is somebody in the bar, they know who we are. They can say, hey, I kind of have this inclination. I would like to learn. I want to know more. They know that we are safe people they can go to if they get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We do love to go out. We love to party. We need to love to rowdy out. We have our boys' night out thing that we do, which the Doms aren't allowed. It's our night to take off once a month and just
boys
go out and have
be
fun.
Boys.
We play.
Yeah. Well, in a respectful way, we play.
We play respectfully.
Yeah. I'd like to go.
Oh, honey, I've seen you out in the bars.
I'd like to go around with.
But for him, that is respectful.
I want to hear from both of you two a little bit about...
You two who?
Darren and Tony.
Darren and Tony. I'm sorry, names are just... this lack of sleep is making names misfire big time in my brain.
It's okay, George.
What is the Leather Boys for you, personally?
Well, the Leather Boys for me personally is a group of guys that I can count on when I need them. And it's an outlet. It's a place for, like Robert said, education, support, and a lot of fun, a great deal of fun. You can't be around us and not have a good time.
And Tony?
Well, basically for me, it would be pretty much as already stated, but also. We do try to help in the community with different functions, with other clubs and groups, by at least donating our time and effort and at least showing up for support with other fundraising activities as well. For me, it's a safe group that I can be with and be myself and not have to worry about what other people are thinking.
I think safety is a key word here.
Definitely.
I know there's people that meet people online and want to play. That can be dangerous.
Personally, that's going to be your choice. I would say not. You get to know somebody if you're going to allow that level of play.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people, they trick. They trick online, they internet chat, they do all that mess, and if they hook up, they hook up. But I would not suggest hooking up with somebody you don't know for leather play.
Right.
Interview them first and get a referral.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and don't forget the credit card and the bank statement and the First Electric bill.
And I think that's one of the things that's so important about groups is that when you join a leather group, you've got a safe space.
Yeah.
You've got people looking out for each other.
You also have some place you can go, and you've got a group of people that you may not know the answer, but one of them might, and there's no such thing as a stupid question. The stupid thing is not asking a question.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not familiar with this. What do I do in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Or there's this level of play somebody wants, and how far do I go? And you go as far as you're comfortable with, but you've got to set those limits in advance, and you've got to be able to trust that person to respect that limit.
Yeah.
And it's just learning where you're at physically, sexually, and mentally. And emotionally.
And I'd like to expand a little bit on the word education. I don't think, it's not quite like in school.
No, not quite. When we're talking about education, we're talking about everything from just sitting around discussing protocols. It can be demos. You know, how do you flog? How do you play safely with hot wax? How do you do some other...
Fire play.
Electricity, you know, ultraviolet wands, things like that. How do I do that? What do I do? How is it going to feel? What's the experience like? What am I going to get out of it?
Even things like bondage.
Yeah.
Learning how to do it right as a top or a bottom.
It takes skill and trust.
It also takes checking in periodically.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because one of the big things with when it comes to leather sex is actually hitting that euphoria, that space where you just kind of zone out and all you are is just that emotional feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much about an orgasm as it is about the headspace and that euphoria you get from just being able to let go and just go there.
I want to kind of go around with each of the boys. Has BDSM for you ever been about pain, or has it been about something bigger?
Start with Tony. He's good
Tony.
He's a kinky little one to answer that one.
Well, thank you, I suppose.
Because there's this kind of myth that, it's all about pain, you know.
Define pain.
Yeah.
Well, it's not so much for me for pain as it is for reaching the threshold of letting go, release of the, and overcoming the uncomfortable feeling and getting beyond it.
What about you, Darren?
Well, I think Tony kind of hit it on the head. For me, it's I'm more of a. I get what I get out of it is like Tony said, it's a release of it's very pleasurable. I don't see pain. Mm-hmm. There's also a servitude nature to it too. That brings you joy. Mm-hmm. Well, at least it does for me.
Yeah. And Robert?
Like I said, I've written songs about that. No, but a lot of it, again, like I said earlier, and like they have just both kind of confirmed, it's not so much a sexual act as it is a growing experience, hitting a mental and emotional euphoria that really goes beyond sex. Yes, it involves sex, and a lot of it is sex.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, again, pushing that threshold to get yourself farther. It's kind of like tantric sex with play toys. You know? With, you know, okay, flog, well, a flogger, or, you know, a single tail, fire, mm-hmm. electro play. It's all to get you out of your body and into something better. But you mentioned pain. A lot of people think it's just all, I'm going to beat this kid with a flogger, with a whip. And no, that's not what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
I'd also like to say for me, you know, because I've been both top and bottom. I'm kind of a switch.
A side pocket.
like well, everything. I mean, you know, I'm bi. I'm hermaphrodite. I'm kind of in this no man's land.
You can go wherever you want to. You usually do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or has already been there and it's just revisiting.
But one of the really most awesome things for me with BDSM, with any scene, is that it's not just saying I trust you to another human being.
It's I trust myself.
It's not only just that I trust myself, saying I trust myself, it's an experience of trust in action.
Yes.
And that's a very different thing than, I mean, we can all say I trust you. But when you put your butt up in the air and have someone come down on it, that is trust in action.
I think you're right on that one. But
and what I get from it is this intense sense of bonding with that person I'm playing with. And that connection.
Yeah, and it goes beyond just it goes beyond just the sexual play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier that the concept, well, it's pain. A lot of it may involve a bit of pain, but what's your threshold? I mean, does plucking a nose hair make you scream?
Yeah. And it's, but it's a different, you know, I guess the best way I can describe it is...
That was a bad analogy. He's sitting here laughing at me. Like, that was a really bad one, sorry. she's sitting here pulling nose hairs right now.
I don't know how many have read the bottoming book and the topping book.
Yeah.
They're really excellent. But one of the things they bring out in the book is that, you know, even as a bottom, when I stub my toe, it hurts. I curse.
We're not talking like about it. Stubbing toe.
That
it's a whole
pain.
Different. That's pain. But what you're doing with BDSM
after,
is a different type of pain.
Yeah, it's a very eroticized pain.
Yes.
And it's not always necessarily about pain. Sometimes it can be.
It's very pleasurable, actually.
Well, sometimes it can be the interplay of just a feather.
Yeah.
And then a smack, then a ice cube, and then it's different sensations.
Yes.
And it's, you
but
know,
those
so
sensations
much we
get
live
you
in that
in the, yeah.
logical thinking part of the brain, and it gets us out of there, because we don't, the brain all of a sudden goes, oops, this doesn't compute, and then it switches sides and goes, okay, now it makes sense.
Now it makes sense, exactly.
You know.
It's the, the unpredictability.
Mm-hmm. And so it helps us get that part cut off. And then we can go into that trance.
Yeah,
that
I agree with that. Definitely agree with that.
Well, I know that we're starting, the group's pretty new, right?
Yeah, we founded the group in March 1st.
Yeah.
So we're a new club in town. We've all been a member of this or that or this or that.
Yeah.
And it was just time for us to formulate a club that's going to fit our needs and still be able to do what we do, which is help the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can go out on any given night and go out to one of the leather bars like the Ripcord, Mary's, whatever, and you will see subs. They're obviously subs, bottoms, whatever you want to call them. And not all subs are bottoms. Some of them are very good tops.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But, well, the misconception is just because you're a sub, that means you're a bottom, and it's not. Just because you're a dom doesn't make you a top.
Uh-huh.
That is a control situation. That's the head trip. That's the fun learning. But sexually, it has nothing to do with sex.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, just because you're bottom in bed doesn't mean you're...
Doesn't mean you're a sub.
No. Exactly.
I mean, the sex is totally different from what we're talking about as far as the leather lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I see so many subs out there. They have no idea about protocol. I've seen quite a few of them get into trouble in the bar.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what their limits are. They don't know how to say no. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to negotiate a scene.
Or they're afraid to sometimes. Or
And those are the people we are out there for.
Mm-hmm. How do you negotiate a scene? What's the process? And I'm going to go around because I want everybody to kind of jump in on this a little bit. Because it's different for everybody a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
Well, the way I negotiate a scene is I first get to know the person. If they're going to be in town for a while, that gives me a little bit more time. But I pretty much, if they're up and forward, if they're honest with you, they will share with you, you know, their experiences. You can find out what they're into. You may go, oh, well, you know, you're hot looking, but I'm not into body punching, or I'm not into some of their sports. So you've got to check out and see what that person's into and if they're skillful at it. You don't want to find a top that isn't very skillful in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And get a flogger. Or they say they're more skillful than they are, and then they end up hurting you.
And then you have a flogger in your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that is also a matter of getting to know the person you're going to play with. You don't just go home and expect leather sex from somebody you don't know. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what their level of experience is, and you could get hurt or you could hurt them.
And generally, a very good sir, top, daddy will usually tell you, well, you know, they're proud of their work they do. They're proud of their skill. They're proud of their craft. So they'll generally be eager to talk to you about it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know when I've topped, you know, before I try anything new, I learn. I do a lot of research. I talk to people that have done it. I learn the ins and outs before I ever do it on someone else.
Well, most of the times with anything I play with, I will play the bottom for it because I want to know what it feels like. So when I do it to somebody else, I know what they're experiencing. I know what feels good, what feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so I agree with that wholeheartedly. But you need to be informed. You need to find out the safety issues of whatever game you're going to be playing, whether it's a flogger, wax.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know that they have the knowledge. Because there are certain, I mean, you can play with some candle wax, but there are some candle waxes that will burn a hole in your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some that are safe to play with.
Yeah.
And just knowing the difference.
And also, you know, knowing just what to do when you run into problems.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to scenes where problem came up during the scene and somebody panicked. And didn't know what to do from that point on. Learning all the ins and outs.
But it's also setting a limit when you're negotiating a play session.
Yeah.
Negotiating limits. Say, this is my limit. This is as far as I go. And if they can push you a little bit further, they're going to try, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But when you negotiate that safe word or you say stop, that means stop.
Yeah. And no's not a safe word.
No is not a safe word.
No. Neither is stop.
Well, stop can be a safe word. If you flat out, if that's what you've negotiated, or even...
It depends on what you negotiate.
But again, if you are into a scene and you're into a euphoria and you're hit and you can't speak, there you can negotiate a hand gesture as a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if I wiggle my left toe, that means, okay, slow down, you know, caution, slow down, let's...
Mm-hmm.
let me get back where I was, or I've gone, you pushed me a little far, let's bring it back a little.
And but, I also know that, you know, just from my experience topping, you know, a good top will read the bottoms about the language.
Yeah, you really shouldn't have to have to call a safe word.
Yeah.
But you need to at least negotiate it if it's the first time you're playing with somebody.
It's got to be there, yeah. Tony, any thoughts on all this? You're so quiet.
Y'all covered about everything I could say.
Wow, Tony's speechless.
It was the first time for everything. Enjoy it while it lasts.
And see, it's already started again.
And I also want to bring up the fact that, you know, I've been coming to the boy meetings, and, you know, we're not just about BDSM.
No.
Sometimes we go out and just be boys.
Well, we have members of the Houston Leather Boys that aren't even into leather, but they are subs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be in leather to be a sub.
Yeah.
And I think that's another kind of big misconception is, just because you like to serve and you like being the sub in the situation doesn't mean you have to like leather. You don't. I know a lot of people that more, you know, they're BRB cowboys or they're just everyday JRs kind of twinks that are subs and they enjoy it, but they have nowhere to go to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, well, if I'm going to go there, I have to wear leather and I have to do. No, you don't. You've got to be you.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you look like you have something.
Well, I was going to say, as many people, especially if they are from that genre, that JR's crowd or that South Beach crowd, they generally feel like we're unapproachable because we're in leather.
And we're kind of scary to them, and they need to know that we're not scary. If you have a question, come up and say, hey, can I talk to you about this? I want to learn.
Mm-hmm. And chances are you'll get more than you bargained. A leather man will be very eager to talk about what he's into and so forth.
And I would also like to say, you know, different people get into BDSM for different reasons.
Yeah.
There's some that are just into bondage. Some that don't want anything else.
Everybody has their own fetishes and what gets them off. And I know people they can't even get an erection if they are not hogtied to the point they can't move.
Yeah.
There are people that is their specific fetish, but if you even dare try to tickle them, forget it. You know, they don't like tickle torture. Or if you tie them up, some people love to be tied up and flogged. Some people don't even get that thing near me. If you even try to spank me.
Or a paddle.
Yeah. You know, there are so many fetishes, and it's just what you're into. But you've got to also keep in mind, just because you're into something more extreme than I am, this doesn't
mean...
It's
not a contest.
It's not a contest, and your fetish is your fetish. That's what gets you off. Mine is mine. I've got way too many of them. Darren's even worse than I am when it comes to that. So.
I'm probably worse than both of you put together.
Yeah, you'd have to put me, Darren, and Tony all together to equal one of you. But with the Houston Leather Boys also, you know, is not just about just talking and running around having a good time. It's also about demos and things like that.
Yeah.
We can say, well, this is what it's like, this is what to expect, but when you actually have a demo okay, we're going to have a little demo, we've got our little demo dungeon master, for lack of a better word, our dungeon master controlling the scene, explaining what's going on.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, you get the perspective of the top and the bottom in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, example for flogging. What does the person who's flogging get out of it? What does the person who's being flogged get out of it?
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's also showing technique, how to do it properly without hurting somebody.
Where to hit and where not to hit.
You know, no kidney, okay? Don't hit the kidney. Yeah. You know, there are certain places that are good, that feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, it's a sharp smack, it's a pain. But it's a good pain. It's not a bad pain.
Knowing when to wrap and not to wrap.
Exactly. Knowing how hard to hit, how fast to go. And so demos are a really good way to learn to visually see what we are talking about.
And then be able to
sit there and talk to the person afterwards and say, okay, so what'd you get out of it? How does it feel? What is it like?
And y'all have seen me do demos.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, almost always when I do a demo, I try to involve everybody there, and if they want to.
Yes.
Like when I do my fire play demos, I'll light my whole body on fire, including my penis.
Yeah.
And then I'll go around afterwards and say, do you want to feel what it feels like in the palm of your hand?
Mm-hmm.
And those that want to experience
it. That first little sensation, they're kind of like, ooh, and they're like, hey, that felt good.
Yeah.
Do it again, you know?
And I'm, you know, I've always had people go, ooh, that was great. Can you do me here?
Yeah, yes.
Can you do me on my...
And you end up setting three or four people on fire.
As long as they're shaped.
Yeah, but it's like here. When you did that one fire demo, and I was like, ooh, the cupping, that was highly intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Cupping, for those who don't know, you take like a little tea light candle or something, you put it, light it, and put it on somebody's body. While it's burning, you stick a cup on top of that, so that when the tea light, the oxygen is rushed down, the tea light goes out, it literally suctions the cup onto your skin, wherever it is.
And it's the most pleasurable feeling.
And it's like a full body massage. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely incredible. It looks scary as all get out. It looks scary as hell. I can say hell, can't I? It looks painful. It looks scary. It's one of the most relaxing things you ever did. And I mean, I had five cups going down my back, down my rear, everywhere. And I was just like, no, don't take them off. I just want to go sleep. It feels so good, you know. But that's the whole thing about doing demos, because then people get to see it. They get to talk to you. And I walked around for 15-20 minutes with those cups on. Everybody's going, ooh, what's it feel like? One finally fell off, and then Gigi was like, we need to take the rest of them off, or he's going to break all my glasses, yeah. But, I mean, in the interim,
cheap. I mean, I get them at the...
Yeah. But you ended up having three or four more people. It's like, okay, I want to try that. I want to try that. And they had never in their life thought they could even be intrigued by it.
Yeah.
So
I think demos, you know, it's kind of like...
They're
experiential learning versus book learning.
Yeah.
You can pick up a book and read about it.
But until you see it in action.
Until you see it.
Exactly.
Until you experience it, it's... totally different. Well, anything else?
Oh, that is so true. Oh, my God. Because I long ago read about all the psychology part of S&M, and I knew, you know, what people did to other people, and I was okay with that until I went to my first party and actually saw somebody being flogged, and I was just stunned.
And it finally started connecting all the stuff you were reading about, seeing it in action, right?
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. I thought, okay, you know, I can take that. But wow, seeing somebody flogged.
Really? So tell me, Jimmy, did you jump up on the rack after that?
Oh, no.
That I want to know.
No.
Oh, I can take that.
But there ain't enough flesh on them bones to be flogged.
But I sure like to watch.
Yeah, it's also very erotic just to be, you know, sitting in a scene.
Oh.
Negotiate a scene where you're just the voyeur. You're sitting in the corner.
Yes.
Handcuffed to a chair just watching. That's
yes,
great.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
And sometimes being put on exhibition by your daddy can be a hot scene.
Definitely.
It always is for you, Gigi.
Yeah. Well, of course it were. Yeah, for Gigi, yeah.
Yeah.
No, unfortunately, my lot is I'm the one stuck in the corner holding the camera all the time.
We should take such wonderful pictures, Robert.
Yeah, well, I'm good at what I do.
Really?
Oh, Jimmy, don't even get me started.
Well, for people that are interested in joining the
voice,
Houston
please.
Leather Boys...
Wait a minute, what was this?
Do a demonstration for us.
Right here, right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, in a minute.
Okay,
we'll
go
there.
Before we go to demos, I want to ask... Who, if someone's interested in joining the Houston Leather Boys, who do they contact?
They can go to HoustonLeatherBoys.net. Mm-hmm. They can read about us, see what our mission statement is, find out who we are. There's some pictures in the gallery we started putting up. Their contact email address, if they want to get a hold of us. What I did this evening before I came over here, I put a new page on there, Informative Reading.
Oh, good.
And it's their books, whether they are tutorials about protocol, gay history, leather history, or just really good gay fiction that actually depicts the leather lifestyle correctly. I put a listing of different books that would be very helpful, you know, whether you're a novice or whether you're as experienced as Gigi here, that... They're good books, and
One of the best ones I could say for people who want to learn about leather, basic leather protocols for public protocols, the history of gay leather, I would pick up The Ties That Bind as by Guy Baldwin. And it's a really good book. It teaches you a lot of the basic protocols. It goes into the history enough to let you understand where the leather lifestyle came from and why these protocols exist.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best books I could say, is to get The Ties That Bind by Guy Baldwin and just read through that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick that up at Black Hawk. You can pick it up at Leather Forever, just about anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Or you can buy it online.
Yeah, you can do that as well now, too. Mm-hmm. So if anybody asked me and they wanted to know, I would say that's the first book you should go get.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, if you want to reach us directly, just go to HoustonLeatherBoys.net. It's all one word, HoustonLeatherBoys.net.
Cool.
Great.
Are you wrapping up, Gigi?
Yeah. Is there any last words about the group? Any last thoughts anybody wants to share?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if anyone's interested, our meetings are...
The first Thursday.
First Thursday of the month.
Mm-hmm. At 7:30. Currently, our meetings are being held at Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we are doing Boys Night Out, which is the first Saturday of every month. We normally meet around 10 o'clock at Bricks, shoot some darts, have some beers, then we start our bar crawl from there. It is Boys Night Out. With respect to all of the Doms, it's Boys Night Out. Doms are requested to go have their own fun evening.
Yeah. Well, then you gave up your evening this month to be on this show.
Well, yes. Yes, we did.
Tomorrow. Thank you.
Shh. Thank you. He's not getting the whole time change thing between Friday and Saturday.
Yes, Jimmy. Saturday, yeah.
You had to go say it.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, for 17 and a half years, we were on Saturday night, and I still can't get the Friday night thing.
No,
you
know? I get it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's hard for me, too. Before we go, we do have someone who's also in the Boot Blacks. Did you want to say a few words about the Boot Blacks?
Yes, Darren is also the founder of the Gulf Coast Boot Blacks. Go, Darren.
Hey.
I'll just tell you a little bit about boot blacking. Boot blacking is taking care of leather. That's my fetish, is basically serving. I can always be found in some little dark corner on a Saturday night.
Polishing somebody's boots with his tongue.
Usually with the tongue.
Yeah.
Gulf Coast Boot Blacks, we are a regional club. We have a member in San Antonio, we got a member in Austin, and we have members here in Houston. And they're really eager to work on your boots, and they're not all as sick as I am, but they still do a good job.
They do a really good job.
Mm-hmm. And many, many times you see boot blacks donating their services for charity.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Darren and the boot blacks here locally, and I know the ones in Austin as well, when there's a fundraiser, they are there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with the money you give that boot black, that goes to that charity.
That's right.
I mean, if you see the boot black out, tip the boot black for his effort, but you know, just keep in mind the money you're paying to have your boots done, that's going to that charity event that night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're not there trying to make a quick buck. They're there trying to help, and that's how they help.
Yeah.
That's how they contribute. They can't get up on a stage and sing and dance. They don't want to get in drag. The way that they help is they get out there and they boot black for your dollars.
There you go. Oh.
So they can donate that money to that charity. So
I think that's incredibly admirable.
Mm-hmm. And with that, I think we covered everything.
Cool. Okay.
Thanks for this time.
Thank you. Thank you, Gigi. We need to jump in here and remind folks that they're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, right here on good old KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. And down there in Galveston, you can pick us up at 89.5 FM. And Chris will fill you in on everything I forgot to say.
www.kpft.org.
And how do they get in touch with us personally?
Afterhours@kpft.org.
Oh, good.
A little transition music before we bring in our kind of round table talking about going over some more of the events that are coming up in the community. And
some of the impressions over this week.
And before you announce that, I need to announce that we've brought this special show because of the circumstances, but this is our 18th birthday.
Oh, my.
After Hours went on the air September 6th, 1987.
My God, we're legal.
Yes, we are legal now.
Well, you know, the sad part is, you know, to be celebrating that in the midst of
I know
all that's going on.
I know. That's why this is the first I've even mentioned it on the air.
Who's going to jump out of the cake?
You, bitch. Okay, tell me about this piece of music.
Yeah, I was looking at the CDs there, and you know, this is a song that just kind of works for a lot of different things. And, you know, I think the spirit of New Orleans is kind of guiding everybody what they're doing right now. And so we're going to go a little Sid Spencer from Chasing That Neon Rainbow. And,
yeah, the late, great Sid Spencer.
And The Wind Beneath My Wings. And we'll be back with Roundtable.
Must have been cold there in my shadow to never have sunlight on your face. You were content to let me shine.
to the spirit of New Orleans out there. I know they're kind of, I think the spirit of that town is kind of leading us on, and I know after talking with a lot of people who, they don't like the term refugee, they like the term survivor.
Your big, thick pal.
Hey, guys, we're talking. We're on the air now. They may not be able to hear it on the mic. Your mics aren't on yet, but I can hear you. It's driving me crazy. I just love when I'm trying to talk about something serious and you guys just got to screw around, so... I guess I should be used to it now. Cause
exactly.
Since you guys, I can't seem to get a serious point out of y'all at any point.
Sorry, we've been at the other show all night, the one in the back room.
But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I missed the first part of the show. I was still over at the Ripcord doing the first of many fundraisers here in the Houston GLBT community. A couple of resources for you to go to find out about some of the events and some of the things that you can do in the community. If you go to Yahoo Groups and you do a search, you can go to Louie Weekend. That's L-U-E-Y, Weekend, all one word. Search for that Yahoo group. That gives you the Houston Council of Clubs. Many of the member and auxiliary clubs are putting on events, so they'll be broadcast on there. You can go to the Rainbow Cross, which is it the Rainbow Cross or just Rainbow Cross. Houston's Rainbow Cross is the Yahoo group. Houston's with an S, Rainbow Cross, all one word. Check out the Yahoo groups on that. We'll be clearing houses for that. We also have a site on the HoustonBigMen'sClub.com website. If you go to the website, on the front page, there is a button that says Houston Cares. And click on there, and we're going to have a calendar of events coming up of different events.
Fundraisers and stuff.
Fundraisers and that tomorrow. The Colt 45s have an undecadent benefit for Katrina. Like I said, refugees, they told us, you know, they want to be called survivors. Hot, sweaty, and loads of fun with your hostess, Daddy Rose Smith, slinging drinks behind the bar. Basically, what's going to happen is... Daddy Rose is one of the bartenders over at EJ's, and I think most of the other bartenders are also kicking in their tips from 2 to 8 p.m. To help out with the relief fund. Colt 45s will be accepting new personal items, phone cards, gently used clothing, and toiletries especially, to be donated to GLBT Katrina survivors. That's the important thing. What you're seeing a lot of these people do is we're going to find the GLBT community out there who's displaced, and that's who we're going to go help. Because there's already been some reports of people who have been harassed because they're gay in the shelters. And especially when you consider, you know, the Red Cross is okay with us, Salvation Army, and a lot of shelters are being set up in churches.
Ooh.
Never underestimate people's ability to rise to the lowest level of...
Our community's out there. We're here to help.
In a world where it is true to be said that not only the best... That situations like this bring out the best in people, it can also bring out the worst. The idea that people would take advantage of a situation as horrible to and treat other people badly, you know.
You have to look at the history of it, you know. Even in the times of, you know, think back of the Holocaust, the lowest peg on the rail was the gay man.
Yeah.
It was the homosexual. That, you know, there is that pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got nothing, when you are that desolate, I guess in some sense, you have to say you'll grasp on anything to pull yourself out of there. And if that's what it takes, you know, it's the same bullying mentality we see in our schools.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
and prisons in
and people refuse to see themselves as all being on the same page in a situation like this.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all survivors, refugees, whatever word you... They're all... All those people who made it out...
They survived. You know, they're not floating around in the
gay,
water out
straight,
there.
Gay, straight, black, white, it... I mean...
You know, that's the downside. We you know, a lot of people keep referencing this back to 9/11. But, you know, I remember that great quote after 9/11. The... supposedly, it was you know, maybe an urban legend. Some kids said that, you know, look at the people. There's no black, there's no white. Everyone's gray.
Right.
And unfortunately, what we're seeing with the relief efforts in especially New Orleans is the fact that the predominant number of the people who couldn't get out of the city, who didn't have the cars, who didn't have the transportation.
Or the financially strapped.
The financially strapped. And the majority of them are African American.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
which, New Orleans in general.
But
New Orleans is
also a majority.
But, you know, that's another part of it, that people are looking at this going, you know, I'm sitting there watching some of the stuff, and the amount of African Americans in there, you know, if they didn't have the word New Orleans printed across the top, you would almost think we're talking Mogadishu,
mm-hmm. right?
Nigeria, or Haiti. Seeing what's going on there,
and it doesn't look like the United States.
It doesn't look like it, and it's not been acting like it.
You know, in regards to the referencing of 9/11, on 9/11, we had some buildings in a very specific location that got destroyed.
Yeah.
This is an entire city.
Well, this is an entire city.
Entire city. From New Orleans clear out to Biloxi, Mississippi.
Even out toward Mobile and Pensacola, too, I understand.
Yeah. I mean, so, can you imagine if, you know, all of a sudden here in Texas, you take a line from Brownsville up to Laredo,
right,
and just basically trace the coast up there. And imagine all of that territory just decimated.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how it is exact square mileage, but it sounds are close to me. That's what we're talking about, is just, you know, the Category 5, Category 4 areas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we haven't even seen what was hit first.
No.
It's like, what would happen if something like this hit and we had... And all of a sudden, Austin or what's the other big city out there?
Dallas,
San Antonio, were suddenly beachfront property.
Right.
That would mean, I mean, think about that. Everything from the gone, and that would be here. We got a taste of that in Allison.
Yeah. Right.
But the waters go away. The next day, the
right.
waters start to recede. We get lucky in that, and we lost 23 people. There are thousands who may be dead.
Right,
and I think that's part of what's kind of hampered the effort, is because we as Americans, I've said it before, we're a knee-jerk reactionary society.
Yep,
and basically, we need to see the bodies before we do anything. That's what's taken so long to get the relief there. You know, 9/11, when we saw the people jumping out of the street, we knew it was real.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, our news, no matter what side, if you want to call it liberal or Democrat, they sanitize it so we don't see that.
Now, I understand the New York Times on its front page today had a picture of a person's body floating face down in the floodwaters.
Mm.
You know,
and I mean, that's the sort of thing that, you know, Latin America and Europe, they would be showing that. You know,
right.
The suicide bombers.
They have no problem showing this.
They would, when the suicide bombers, you know, they would take the victims, just put a sheet over them, line them up, and show the world this is what happened.
Yep.
And I think that's why no one's why we're getting not the reaction out of this, is because right now, the official death count is 200.
But the thing's going to be 10,000.
It's going, yeah.
It's going to be up in the
which
thousands.
Is more than Galveston in 1900.
Right. That was 8,000, I think, 8,000, 12,000 Galveston.
And that's got to be because, they were already, there was somebody who was saying that already in their one town, in this one little town, they had lost
over 100 people. So, you know, 200 people, my butt.
Well, that's,
what
you're getting is the official death toll out of Mississippi, because they can physically count those people because they've recovered those bodies. In New Orleans, it's hard to recover a body unless it floats up.
Yeah.
And really, New Orleans focuses on the living and not the people who are dead.
And like I said, you're only talking about New Orleans. Everything south of New Orleans is underwater.
Yep.
But one of the reasons why the Big Men's Club is doing a lot of this stuff is the fact our president, his parents and his brother lived in Buras, which for Hurricane Katrina was ground zero one. They got hit with Category 5 storms.
Wow.
They were hit for several hours with that Category 5 storm. That town is off the map.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Now, there's some reports coming in that some structures survived. They're not 100% sure yet, but they're not even trying to get there yet.
They're
talking 20,000 people just in that parish.
That's the thing, too, is that we don't know the scope of the tragedy in Louisiana yet, because the focus is so much on getting refugees out. That really,
assess the damage.
Yeah. Right. It's hard to get in there and see, okay, this many people are dead, this is gone, this is still standing, whatever.
Yeah. And how many people are underneath the rubble?
Right.
And how many people have been gobbled up by alligators and other creatures?
On TV, everybody who knows me knows one of my big things is science fiction. On a science fiction show, in a heartbeat, they can, some alien race can make an entire town, an entire planet vanish.
Yeah.
This is real life.
And this is a hurricane.
An entire town.
Towns. Communities.
Parishes. Yeah. Whatever name, pick the name for the area. They're gone. Right. Nothing left but crumbled, scrap.
All right, let's put it this way. You want to put it in the simplest terms. The students this year who are in high school studying United States geography.
Right.
You are the last one to draw the map this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guarantee that you're going to see the Louisiana part that extends out into the Gulf. That's changed.
Yep.
The parts of Mississippi. Islands are gone in Mississippi.
I understand some barrier islands in Louisiana are gone, too.
Yeah.
Completely wiped out.
We're talking about, you are going to be redrawing the maps. The students next year, when the textbooks come out, there is going to be a new map of the United States. A new map of Louisiana.
It's sobering, really, when you think about it in those terms, though. Here for the last, 300 years, we've been drawing the map of Louisiana like this, and now that geography has completely changed.
Yeah.
You see certain arrogant ideas of people. You've heard of man over nature they can do whatever they want. They can hold back this and change that. And nature can come back and say no.
Guess again.
Yes.
Never underestimate Mother Nature.
Never underestimate the fact that this planet can wipe out all our plans, all our stuff in a matter of minutes. A
friend of mine told me one time, he says, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
There's an island that's being swallowed by a volcano, slowly swallowed by a volcano. Was a resort island. Just beautiful homes and beaches and stuff, and 80% of the island is under lava.
Yeah.
The equivalent here, 80% of a city no longer existing as it once did.
Mm-hmm.
And people can talk about the history of New Orleans and all of the beautiful things that people would go to see, everything from Mardi Gras to the old homes with the wrought
the
iron
garden district,
the
above ground cemeteries
and the above ground cemeteries,
yeah.
and most of that is
gone.
Those above
ground. Even to rebuild, you know, that's fine. We can rebuild. We can make it look just as nice as it was. But that's not a 19th century home.
No.
Mm-mm. That's not the character. That's not the spirit.
Right. That's what made New Orleans.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, the fact that this town, more than any other, more than Houston, more than things, I would dare to say, more than San Francisco, more than New York, opened its arms up to the GLBT community of the world.
Yep.
And the fact that they did that, you know, it's time that we're going to be stepping up. And like I said, it's amazing watching the people who came out and said, you know, we can do this.
New Orleans was really more of a melting pot than, say, New York or some other big metropolitan area was, really. I mean, the French Quarter was kind of a convergent zone of the Spanish, the French, and the other cultures that had gathered there. You know, it was a bigger melting pot than, you know, New York ever was.
You know, I have a friend who survived, who left before it started. And he doesn't even know, has no idea if his apartment is still there.
Yeah.
There was a young man here earlier,
and
we were discussing the fact that although all of this has happened, and this will affect life for years to come, the one thing they can see as a bright spot is as long as you are still alive. All of the stuff, no matter how expensive,
Material can be replaced.
Things can be replaced. The human lives that are gone are gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, my thing is that me being a young transgendered bisexual is the fact that that was one place where most of the young kids could go and actually experiment and try this out. And now suddenly we've lost a place where people can go and be them true selves. And I feel really bad about that. But I also feel that Houston has begun to open up more and become more of a GLBT center. And it's kind of started to take over the responsibilities of New Orleans. And I hope this continues.
And sure it will. I mean,
and the downside of all this stuff is, you know, because of the timing of the event, you know, 100,000 predominantly men were heading to New Orleans for Southern Decadence.
Right.
Another 600 to 700 of us were heading there for Convergence. And
there's 50 or 60 British tourists were there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot, but these were people that were heading there that were going to be there this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
lost $100 million.
And the fact it
New Orleans did.
The fact is that a lot of people who were going to this, their first thoughts were, you know, of the loss of the event, not the loss of this town, the loss of what this town meant, mm-hmm. of why you were going there.
Right.
You know, I don't really think, I mean, you can go to any town and you can throw together something where you can drop your pants and do the things you do at Southern
Decadence.
You can do that you can find some place to do that in any town.
Mm-hmm. Really? I mean,
but it was the spirit of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of people just thought of it as now that, you know, oh, we've lost out on this. But, you know,
I mean, putting it in terms of not even a
the whole new
not
culture.
Just specifically a GLBT thing.
Well, yeah, now the worst of it all, though, is homeless.
Come on.
We have think about the historical things that were born there. I mean,
the
one of the only true American art forms, jazz.
America's classical music.
The home of that is
the blues,
home of the blues, the home, you know, where all of these things were born out of, all of that. While the history, the memory of that history is there, the home of that, you know, physical home of that is gone. You know,
really, a lot of people, you know, did an interview a couple of nights ago on Nightline. And they were saying that, you know, New Orleans isn't dead. It's still alive in their hearts and, you know, in their memories.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it's still very much alive to them.
You know, and it's just a question of now you start over and it's not what it was, but you start over and you try to do something new.
Take your cues from Houston after Allison. I mean, look at how many, you know, the loss of life was minimal, but the loss of homes, businesses, et cetera, was huge. Mm-hmm. You know, and here in New Orleans, it's almost flip-flopped, where it's the loss of life is massive, but the loss of property is, you know, even greater.
Yeah. Okay. Hopefully, if anything, New Orleans is going to come out of this is, you know, there may have been, I don't know the history of New Orleans. I don't know, you know, the history of the racial struggles in there. But I think what they're going to have to do is look at this and see this tragedy and see what happened after the fact. You know, Hurricane Katrina didn't knock out New Orleans. It wasn't the wind.
No.
It wasn't the tornadoes. That's what took out Mississippi. It was the filling up of Lake Pontchartrain.
Right. It was the breaking levee. The levee breaks.
And the Mississippi River backing up into the city. If those things would have held, you know, then it could have been different. You know, maybe New Orleans would have actually survived more if I would have hit directly over it. Mm-hmm. Because maybe the water would have gotten out of there sooner and didn't fill up as much. Well, there's a lot of this if.
Well, the thing is...
And the ifs in the end, you know, don't end up mattering worth, a fiddler's dam, as the old saying goes, you know. Because you can't, you know, if doesn't matter, here is what we have.
Right.
If frogs had wings, they wouldn't be bumping their ass.
Well, what I don't understand is that, I mean, up till just before it hit, they knew it was going to hit, and they knew what was going to, you know, basically, except for the levees breaking and stuff, they knew what was going to happen. Yeah. How come the U.S. government wasn't prepared for something like this?
Because, well,
the Army Corps of Engineers had funding cut.
The short answer? The entire administration was on vacation.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. I mean,
the president was in Crawford.
Afraid to see a little old lady.
His head secretary, Andrew Carr, was in Maine. Cheney is still in Wyoming. Condoleezza Rice was sitting in New York watching Spamalot on Broadway.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, the governor of Louisiana was on the news tonight, and he said that he's been trying to get food down there, and nothing's happening.
Hold on. Nagin or Blanco?
Which one is it?
Let's see. He was on Nightline tonight.
Okay. Is African American?
No, a white guy.
It might have been Lieutenant Governor. The governor of Louisiana is a woman.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, there was a guy that
she was a little ticked off.
I think it was somebody representing a lot of the parishes down there.
It could have been a parish president.
And what it is he's been trying to get food down there, and it's just sitting around. He's through the channels and everything.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I saw him on. He was on the one press conference right after the governor tore Dennis Hastert a new one.
This guy has had food ready to go in there, and he's talked to the, I think it was the Red Cross and a couple other places.
Red Cross
went through the channels
and National Guard.
And it's still sitting there.
And it was there since yesterday.
And it's still there, as far as I know.
That's ridiculous.
Well,
enough food to feed all those people in that convention center.
You know, it was easier to get people...
Phone call he made.
Food... was food got to tsunami victims quicker than it did Katrina victims, if you look at it.
It's like
the tsunami ended up causing... And the tsunami hit, you know, more than...
What's getting me is that they've already estimated the damage at $35.5 billion, and all Congress has given us is $10.5 billion, one-third of what...
They say that is a down payment on the... Yeah.
That's the beginning part, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that they came back from their summer vacation, mm-hmm. does show at least something.
Yeah. I don't know if it shows much, but it shows something.
One last bit of bash bashing is, you know, we're in the middle of a gas crisis. And yes. Bush went from Crawford, which is just outside of Waco. He flew at a low level over the affected area, went to Washington, gave a couple of speeches, and then he flew back to the area. Why in the world is all this extra fuel being wasted on that? He should have been there from the start.
Yeah, but it wasn't secure. They were shooting planes down.
They weren't shooting planes down.
Well, they were trying to shoot
one small arms fire shot at a helicopter.
And there were snipers. That's why. They had to get it secure. That's when the army came in today.
The army's
not doing anything good because all they're doing is treating people like criminals. There's a whole convention center full of women and children that. It's they're just treating them like crap.
Get the hell out of the studio. Get out. I'm tired of you putting in your two cents and we can't hear you on the microphone. Just get out. Rainbow.
I mean, you've got a convention full of women and children and sick people and diabetics, and all the military's doing is holding them hostage because they think they're looters.
Well,
why treat victims like criminals?
You got two people.
I realize that there are going to be people who are going to take advantage of a situation.
Right.
But right now, you put the people, get their butts on the vehicles, get them to the shelters, the homes, the whatever. And yeah, maybe it sounds a little naive and all that, but save the lives first.
Yes.
Then deal with...
Because they've already shown...
Because the lawbreakers are really a very, very minute part of that.
The entire
thing. It's not just that. It's some of the looters are actually part of the people that are in the convention center, and what they're doing is they're taking food back to the convention center and passing it out to everybody there. That's not looting.
There is the other element part of this. You know, there were people that were saying that, you know, there were gangs of people getting ready. You know, as Hurricane Katrina was hitting, going, you know, we're going to go and get out of this place. We're going to loot this place. We're going to take care of it. That's going to happen. That's going to happen to anyone, any of these places, that you have that warning. And the fact is, there's not going to be a stopping for that. These people who you saw walking out of the one appliance rental place with a big screen TV.
Yeah. Well, see, those are the people that they should be prosecuting. The ones that are taking food and
they said they could forgive food and water, but like anything above that was going to be pretty much non-negotiable. I mean,
they will.
I mean, you got a hurricane coming at you. Why steal a TV?
Exactly. I mean,
go get some food. Go get some water.
There was a woman
who
they showed plucking through the debris of her home, and she said, I lost my pictures, and I grabbed a DVD player and a TV. And she doesn't see the logic in it now that she's lost her pictures, which are irreplaceable.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like people in this type of situation, they realize what their priorities are, and suddenly it's a life-changing thing because suddenly their priorities aren't the important thing.
Right.
And, you know, the whole thing down there has gotten so desperate that even one of the parish police precincts had to leave their regular station house and move into the local Walmart, where they've been there for the past week, and they've had to literally loot the Walmart for food.
Technically that's allowed under law.
Yeah.
Because under the state of emergency that was declared.
There was one police officer that he actually got fired from the police force for doing this. He used his cruiser, he had an SUV with a snorkel, to go get food for that convention center out there.
Yeah.
And he specifically did that because he got sick of seeing these people starving.
There's many of the police that are walking off the job.
Yeah.
They quit.
What was it? The police chief, one of the police chiefs quit recently because of what was going on? I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean,
which is beyond their control. They need the army to come in and take over control and treat the police like
criminals. I mean,
they're not trained in this area.
Well, see, the problem is it can't really be the army because what's referred to as posse comitatus. We do not allow, United States law does not allow for the United States military to be used upon its own citizens. except in extreme circumstances. So
I think
normally,
this is an extreme circumstance.
I know, but the fact you're talking about military law there, but the fact is, that just creates more havoc.
Welcome to martial law.
Exactly. What the problem is situations like this are traditionally done by National Guard's troops.
Right. And where are the National Guards?
6,000 members of the Louisiana and Mississippi National Guard are high and dry in Iraq.
Yes.
And in Afghanistan.
There's a couple of National Guard units in Iraq that aren't doing anything right now.
I understand that they actually flew some back from Iraq to come and help out with the relief effort. I don't know if that happened or not, though.
It is, but all they're doing is guarding empty buses that should be taking people to shelter.
You get situations like, I was just reading a thing on here, you know, a bunch of buses came in and they thought it was going to be going to the Superdome. It drove past the Superdome and went to the Hyatt and picked up 700 guests and employees of the Hyatt Hotel who, you know, they've been without food, they've been without water, and they've been without electricity for the same amount of time. But, you know,
the
rooms at the Hyatt are a lot better than the floor of the Superdome.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
There's one of the things about tragedies like this, which sort of is an interesting thing, is that tragedy can be the great equalizer. Disease, the whatever.
Tragedy doesn't discriminate.
This thing wiped out the big homes, mm-hmm. the small shacks,
the little cardboard boxes.
I mean, the little cardboard shanties. This thing, there was a million, you know, they made a point of talking about a multi-million dollar home that was just gone.
Obliterated,
but the slab it was sitting on.
The numbers
all of that was to save the French Quarter.
The numbers are right now that it's about 87% of Gulfport gone. 90% of Biloxi gone. 100% of New Orleans gone.
But the fact is this: there's going
to
be a
seems to have
French Quarter.
It may not have gotten the water damage of 10-foot swells. The fact is, the amount of water that's sitting in there, because basically the composition of what all the buildings are sitting on are super saturated. They're not going to support the weight of the buildings.
Right.
By the time
the water
it's reclaimed swampland. It's not much better than here in Texas.
So by the time when they get the water out and that area starts to dry and the ground will crack and will crumble, those buildings will probably come down.
Well, they've only said it a couple of times, but they are telling people that this area is uninhabitable. There's no returning back to New Orleans or Gulf.
No, they can't return it the same way. Unfortunately, you know, you get people like Dennis Hastert who said there, you know, they can go in and they can rebuild. They can go in, dredge out another couple of feet out of Lake Pontchartrain and take that and dump it into New Orleans. You know, they take 2 foot off the bottom of Lake Pontchartrain, they put it on top of New Orleans. You've now got 4 foot difference.
Well, what they're trying to do is a grade raising that they did in Galveston over 100 years ago after the storm. And, yeah, it should have been done sooner, but, you know, I don't see how that's going to be. It's a Band-Aid solution to a larger problem, really, is what it is.
They need to build up the town.
Right.
If anything, you know, ranting on about why this happened and whose fault, you know, the levee system.
That's not going to get us anywhere.
No. It is at this point right now. What do we do now? Can we help now? How do we make what happens from this point forward better for those who survive this?
And
in whatever form it takes.
And that's what beginning of the show is about.
Yeah, and that's an interesting way of putting it, Merlin, because basically what the victims of Katrina are concentrating on now are most of these people have been separated from loved ones. Their brothers and sisters mm-hmm. and dads went one direction. The mom and grandmother and uncles went the other direction, and there's no communication.
And they're still being split up even now.
And still, we're going on early Saturday morning, Sunday.
Who don't know where their families
and
are.
And they still don't have any contact of if they're alive, if they survived, if they got out. It's not confirmed, but in St. Bernard Parish, there's a warehouse with 2,000 evacuees that were there. And for some reason, last I was able to get a hold of was that they're not evacuated. They can't. Not because they don't have the resources. It's because these people now have to be quarantined.
You know, a friend of mine tonight was saying, who's from New Orleans, was saying that, you know, and we were talking about that, where it's, I mean, he managed to get, I think he's managed to get a hold of his family members. But all of his family members' homes are gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His families are okay, but everything they had, all of their possessions are gone. But they're alive, and as long as they're there, they have at least the possibility of rebuilding something.
They will be rebuilt.
You know.
Well, yeah. I'd like to get your guys' opinion on something real quick.
Okay.
My mother, some of y'all may know her from Vinet. Her name is Rose. What it is she called me last night. And said that their construction companies are hiring like crazy for reconstruction jobs. I mean, what is your guys' opinion on that? I mean, personally, I'd love to go down there and help, but I'm not sure about, because they're saying $10, $12 an hour for this.
It's an 80-hour week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's not necessarily reconstruction. What it is, it's cleaning. You're going to be pulling debris, bricks.
Really, I think our focus should be more here on the people who are here now. Help them out as we can, while we can, and worry about, all that later, because that's minor. They're here, they're alive. Let's focus
on
that.
Deal with the human
Another
lives.
Thing is these are the ones out of there that are still
and
stuck the, in there.
Find homes for those who are alive.
Now, these people aren't even concentrating on long-term plans, not coming to the realization that they're actually going to have to sit here and stay here for months, up to 6 months.
Well, a lot of the thing is this. You know, you're at a point with some of these people. You know, they have been in a news blackout.
Yeah.
They've heard rumors this, they've heard rumors that. You know, you've seen the devastation that rumors can cause. You heard what happened in Iraq. Someone started a rumor and in a matter of minutes 900 people are dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact is you're hearing someone's hearing, well, this is happening in this town, you know, in Baton Rouge they were saying, you know, there's a gas shortage, a food shortage, and there's bands of looters running around. And that's the only news they've been getting. And now that they're getting out to the safety and they can actually see what's going on and finding out what's happened in their community, it may not have hit some of these people yet that, you know, they're screwed.
You know, there was an interesting thing. The, you know, newscasters are by nature supposed to be detached and just deal with what's happening and stuff. I've seen newscasters coming apart at the scene.
There was one
on
newscaster
camera
that actually had his station helicopter fly in food for the convention
and
center.
And some of those newscasters are sitting there going, to hell with my job. I got to help somebody. They're getting in there and doing something.
They tell you to try
something.
And not become the story, you know, in journalism class, but it's hard to avoid becoming the story when you're in the middle of all of it and you're the only resource there is for them. Wayne Dolcefino was in Louisiana, okay, and he was having to share his satellite phone with, you know, the police, the fire, you know, EMS, etc., because that was the only satellite phone available.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the most powerful thing I saw was watching on Channel 76. They had a reporter go up in the helicopter and was giving a aerial tour of New Orleans. And, you know, how in the world he was able to keep it together.
Yeah.
I mean, watching all the coverage on Channel 76, I've only seen one of their anchors break down. And, I mean, she got it together in a couple of minutes. But then you see, Robin Roberts on Good Morning America?
She came up. Her family is there.
Yeah.
And it's just,
just fell to pieces. Jimmy, you've been trying to. Hold on.
Like we were talking earlier, Houston is gearing up to help people now, here.
And one of the things you should all remember out there is the number to the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, which is 713-529-3211. Not only for emergency stuff now, but they're also putting together a section for jobs, because that's next.
They're going to be
emergency stuff is taken care of, and we've got people in at least temporary housing. They're going to need to get jobs, and the switchboard is gearing up. They've had people come to them and say, you know, hey, we want to hire some of these folks. We've got things going on. So
they're doing the database. Yeah, they're doing the database work, because not only for people trying to match up for jobs, they're trying to match up volunteers, and they're trying to match up housing.
Yes.
Yeah. That if you've got room in your house, then contact the switchboard, and they will get you. They'll get you set up. Screen people back and forth, and then you have to screen each other to make sure you're going to be compatible, so that you're not in a shelter. And if you're openly gay, because we've had the issues, like I said, the one shelter already, where there's been some borderline hate crime activity going on, and this is a safe way of where you can be to get out of it.
What I wish we could get the KPFT could get up enough money to get some of these abandoned warehouses and lease them for a while and set up beds and stuff for the GLBT community. That way they have some place to go and stay.
Well, I think what's more
a call to those of us in the community.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the state? What is his name? Perry. The governor of the state of Texas. Didn't he order that all available short income housing be made?
They're working on stuff like that,
Yeah, those are things that are still in the works. They're rumors, whatever. Until it's confirmed,
until it actually happens, until people are able to start moving in. Right now, here in Houston, we've got the Astrodome, we've got Reliance Center. They're doing
Bay Park,
Lakewood Church.
Well,
they have all that space.
Lakewood is really what they're doing is they're collecting money.
Right.
And they're collecting, food, et cetera, everything they can to help people.
All the radio the television stations were emphasizing on the fact that they, as a station, they cannot promote people moving in and staying with other people because of the legal issues.
That's also the thing that Red Cross said, is that we cannot match people with people.
Besides shelters that are set up to help they can't because of legal issues.
Exactly.
And things, if something happens.
In Baytown, to my mind, if there are empty buildings in this place.
Would you be quiet? He's in there talking.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I can hear him.
If there are empty buildings in this place that are sitting there that are not doing it, put people in them.
There's a couple
it's not the best thing in the world,
but
it's a whole lot better than sitting out in the lake that used to be their home.
Yes.
Well, there's
people camping outside the Astrodome right now. I mean, there's warehouses near there that are open and empty. I mean, you could have construction crews go into the Astrodome and start taking out seats to make more room. I mean,
even Palmer Memorial Episcopal Church is serving dinner. Mm-hmm. Now, they're located right at the base of the medical center, but they're serving dinner from, 6 to 7:30? I've got it in the notes there on page 2.
I know for a fact that the Houston Apartment Association has already sent out word to all the apartments in their association. You got a vacant apartment? We need it for these evacuees.
Sure.
The other thing, too, is that I've heard that the International Association of Shopping Centers or some organization along those lines is asking for shopping malls, shopping centers, et cetera, with large empty spaces, empty department stores, whatever, to hand that over to refugees, the Red Cross, to use as a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
I think JCPenney Northwest Mall was one of those places they targeted. But I never heard anything more about it the rest of the day, so I don't know.
We'll be hearing more about
Baytown,
it.
In Baytown, I was at the Red Cross headquarters where they're coming in from Louisiana. In Baytown, there was three different families that were offering their homes to evacuees. Mm-hmm. Red Cross wasn't giving them any influence or any recommendations, so they were out in the parking lot just waiting to grab the first family they could and just take them in there. So the need is, as slow as it is trying to be met. Everyone is going for long-term housing.
I think all these rich people with like the 7 or 8 bedroom houses need to open up. I mean,
thank you.
I mean, it's ridiculous. They're hiding in their homes.
I think what we need to deal with is that here is the situation. Here is what needs to be dealt with. Toss rules, regulations, and all this stuff. These people need some place to be.
Right.
There's even parking
garages. And yes, I realize that. And the best thing is, you, in an emergency situation, is everybody going to do everything absolutely perfectly and beautifully and wonderfully?
No.
And is it all going to go smoothly? No. But you just
gotta try.
You people have to do the best that they can to help. The best that they can, whatever that is.
They call the situation at the Astrodome controlled chaos because they were handling so many people and having to process volunteers at the same time, you know.
Well, I'll say this, is that Houstonians, especially here in the gay community, I have never been so proud of my community as I am this night. After hearing the early part of the show of what the of what this community is doing, mm-hmm. hearing Chris giving his call-in thing from the Ripcord and these other people, and I'm getting a wrap-up sign from Jimmy.
Well, we're getting close to the end here, and what I want to do one last time is want to throw out some important numbers for people. So grab a pencil and paper real quick. I'm pulling down mics here so we can just get this out and to everyone. Important numbers there. You've heard about the switchboard number. Montrose Clinic is going to be having emergency medicines and clinic hours this weekend. For more information, the Hurricane Line 713-830-3047 or on the web at montroseclinic.org. Houston's Rainbow Cross at yahoogroups.com will be clearinghouse for information. Montrose Counseling Center, you heard some of the stuff going on there. That's at montrosecounselingcenter.org. Houston GLBT Community Center at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207, is looking at having volunteers to come in and man the phones. And there's going to be some fundraisers coming up with their movie night. Check out the website, houstonglbtcommunitycenter.org. Don't forget, tomorrow at the EJ's, Colt 45's is going to be doing a fundraiser. Cash donations tipping to the bartenders. Bring stuff, hygienic products. Hit the 99-cent stores. Hit them hard. Get the most bang for your buck because these people need the stuff there. And like I said, it's even a special little toys that you can pick up so that you can... What?
I just want to mention real quick, I noticed this on my way home from work. There are families sitting on the side of the road asking for money. If you see one, give them what you can, because these people have no money. They have no money for food. They have kids. They have family members, and they need something to keep them going.
Okay. At Recess, the Turnabout Show on Saturday, Saturday tomorrow, 7 p.m. at Keys West, we'll be going to the... Relief Fund. If you know one of the refugee survivors who are hearing impaired, contact the Astro Alliance for the Deaf, and they'll be helping out with getting interpreters. Palms Memorial Church, the medical center, is going to be doing, that's at 6221 South Main. From 6 to 7:30, they'll be serving meals for everyone. Assistance Fund is helping with medicines at 713-579-4788. We've got plenty of resources out there, like I said, on the Yahoo groups, Houston's Rainbow Cross on the Yahoo group, Louis Weekend, Lone Star Activists. You can go to HoustonBigMen'sClub.com and click on the Houston Cares button, and we will get this out, and we'll show the community at large what we can do. We've done it with the HIV AIDS crisis. we're going to do it with Katrina. We're going to help ourselves if we have to, and we're going to bring everyone else along with it. For those guests of New Orleans and Houston, welcome to Houston, and hopefully we'll make your stay as pleasant as possible. We'll be back next week.
You have been listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT.
Don't forget to check out our sister program, Queer Voices, every Monday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. We want your story ideas, discussion topics, event announcements, love mail, hate mail,
dirty pictures!
And there are two ways to get it to us.
Snail mail is After Hours, care of KPFT 90.1 FM, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006.
Our email address is afterhours@kpft.org. If you missed a show or want to share a part of a show with a friend, check out our online archive at kpftarchive.org.
We will be back next week, and hopefully you will be able to join us. On behalf of the crew of After Hours, good night and have a great week.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free, Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston and 89.5 FM Galveston. You can always find us on the World Wide Web at KPFT.